Ahead on Radio Network News, I'm John Fox. Critics of the Bush administration in the U.S. expressed alarm about reports that George Bush is mulling military options to knock out Iran's nuclear program. Retired General Anthony Zinni, the former head of U.S. Central Command, told U.S. television he had no detailed knowledge of the alleged military plans, but a preemptive strike against Iran's nuclear program would be extremely risky. Any military plan involving Iran is going to be very difficult. We should not fool ourselves to think it would just be a strike and then it will be over, Zinni said. General Zinni went on to say, "The Iranians will retaliate. They have many possibilities in an area where there are many vulnerabilities. From our troop positions to the oil and gas in the region that have been interrupted, to attacks on Israel, to the conduct of terrorism." Tens of thousands of protesters turned out Monday in small towns and big cities across the United States demanding that undocumented immigrants get a chance to live the American dream. On what is dubbed a National Day of Action for Immigration Justice, demonstrators shook up the streets from Atlanta, Georgia to South Bend, Indiana. In Lexington, Kentucky, they waved signs that read, "We were all immigrants once, and we are not terrorists," the Associated Press has reported. Hundreds of Hurricane Katrina evacuees from as far as Texas and Georgia have signed up to board buses to return to Louisiana to vote in the future of New Orleans. The evacuees are returning to cast early votes Monday in elections for mayor and city council, the first major test of the city's post-Katrina electoral system. "The busing is now practical and symbolic," said Kevin Whelan, spokesman for the Association of Community Organizations for Reform Now, or ACORN. "Part of it is obviously turning out real voters, but it's still obviously a small percentage of the entire electorate," he said. Displaced residents can vote Monday through Thursday or Saturday at early voting stations in Lake Charles, Shreveport, New Orleans, and seven other cities around the state. The offices will be closed for Good Friday. California water officials took advantage of a weekend lull in the stormy weather to patch weak spots in the state's levee system as more rain loomed ahead. After the rainiest March on record, many reservoirs in California's Central Valley are groaning at full capacity and 10 more days of rain are forecast. Rodney Meyer, acting chief of the California Division of Flood Management, said, quote, "We saw in New Orleans the storm was coming in. It was known days ahead, and we're not sure they took all the steps they could have." This is news on the Horn.
Major record labels say that downloading music from the internet is stealing, stealing, stealing. But according to these people, making a mixtape for your friend is stealing too. So is making a tape of a radio show.
Clone radio. We play the songs that sound more like everyone else than anyone else.
When a rock band plays an AC/DC cover at a bar that doesn't pay ASCAP, that's stealing. Or have you ever sung happy birthday to your friend at a restaurant?
Warning!
Happy birthday is copyrighted. So if you're singing in a public place, you'd better be paying royalties or you'll be stealing music. Does all this stuff about stealing music sound absurd? Would you rather have a world where our music culture wasn't the intellectual property of five corporations? Then stop giving them your money and make sure your friends and family don't either. Better yet, try burning them a CD. If we pull the plug on major labels, music gets better. Find out more about what you can do. Check out downhillbattle.org.
Sydney Morning Herald reports that the coal inquiry into the Australian Wheat Board payoff scandal to the Saddam regime has heated up. John Howard is likely to appear as a witness on Thursday following Mr. Vail, who testified for 85 minutes, often replying, quote, "I can't recall," unquote, or, quote, "I don't have an answer," unquote, when asked why he failed to act on or was not told about numerous warnings that the wheat exporter was paying kickbacks to Saddam Hussein. Counsel assisting the inquiry, John Agus, pressed Mr. Vail, the trade minister, over why he asked Australia's embassy in Washington to lobby the then U.S. Secretary of State, Colin Powell, relying on AWB's denials without conducting an independent inquiry into the allegations. Mr. Agus asked, quote, "You were vouching the word and the good name of Australia. Is that correct?" unquote. Mr. Vail replied, saying he relied on his department's advice. Indicted fraudster Tom DeLay may have put off his resignation for the money. John Ferry, a former aide to DeLay, said, quote, he needed to raise money for the defense fund. That was the bottom line, unquote. John Amato today from Crooks and Liars adds, quote, in other words, DeLay was raising money from suckers, supporters, under false pretenses. He asked contributors for financial support, telling them that he needed the money to help with his campaign, when in reality, DeLay knew he'd have to resign and he wanted the donations for his legal defense. DeLay's con is legal, but obviously dishonest, unquote. The Sydney Morning Herald reports today, the U.S. is conducting a propaganda campaign to magnify the role of the leader of al-Qaeda in Iraq, according to internal military documents and officers familiar with the program. The effort has raised his profile in a way that some military intelligence officers believe may have overstated his importance and helped the Bush administration tie the war to organizations responsible for the September 11 terrorist attacks. This is the news on the Head On Radio Network. From Sydney, I'm John Fox.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, good evening. Stupid frame relay service. My sincerest apologies for Friday night. But we were having some hells of poppin' thunderstorms running through here. And I've told you all before that our highfalutin, incredibly expensive internet connection is the technical equivalent of a terrified chihuahua. Every time it thunders, it runs under the bed and refuses to come out. So that's what happened Friday, and I apologize, and, you know, I just sort of paced around the studio aimlessly, sort of lost on Friday. Yuck. But we're working on that part, and hopefully the next time it thunders, that won't happen. Or that's what the guy from Verizon said when he was here Saturday morning. So, you know, maybe. I got to be honest with you, Agnes and I were out of the house for a good part of the afternoon today, and so I didn't catch all the news. Did anything happen? Oh, that's right, that's right. Dear Leader said that he has no intentions of bombing Iran. Is that it? Yeah. He said, we're going to try to use diplomacy. We have no intention of bombing Iran right now. It's not necessarily what has to happen. This was, he went to, what, the Johns Hopkins School of International Studies? Something like that over in Baltimore. And as a and I've got some other sound from, it's just precious. I feel much better now that he said he's not going to bomb Iran. Because, after all, before he bombed Iraq, he told everybody, we're going to bomb Iraq. Or did he? No, come to think of it, he said crap like, we're going to pursue diplomacy and try to, because war is never the first choice. Right? Yeah, he did. Doubt me? How about December the 31st? 2002.
You said we're headed to war in Iraq. I don't know why you say that. I hope we're not headed to war in Iraq. I'm the person who gets to decide, not you.
Of course, he had already decided. We know now from Paul O'Neill's book. We know now from Richard Clark. We know now from Colin Powell's chief assistant, Lawrence Wilkerson. That the decision to invade Iraq and kill what a number that is now approaching, in some circles, 250,000 innocent civilians there. We know that that decision was already made. But in December the 31st of 2002, he was lying like a rug.
You said we're headed to war in Iraq. I don't know why you say that. I hope we're not headed to war in Iraq. I'm the person who gets to decide, not you.
Yeah, okay, George, gotcha. No, he wouldn't make stuff up, would he? He wouldn't just say stuff that was deliberately not true.
Iraq has made several attempts to buy high-strength aluminum tubes used to enrich uranium for a nuclear weapon.
Nah, he wouldn't say anything like that. Heck no. He's as honest as the day is long. He's a man of peace, because he talks to God, and God talks back, and he hears those voices in his head, and he only does what the voices tell him to do. Of course, he also said, when we thought that he, when we were a little concerned about warrantless wiretapping, this was back when he was on the campaign trail, and he said,
anytime you hear the United States government talking about wiretap, a wiretap requires a court order. Nothing has changed, by the way. When we're talking about chasing down terrorists, we're talking about getting a court order before we do so.
Right, getting a court order before we do so. So, you know, I just feel so much better. Never mind that crazy Seymour Hersh. He's just crazy. He's never been right about anything in his life. He's just nuts. Right? Wrong. Everything this guy says a couple of months later turns out to be true. What did he say that there that didn't yeah, it was Seymour Hersh, wasn't it, who said way back that there are thousands upon thousands of photographs of torture and torment and death and hell and damnation and mayhem from Abu Ghraib. Seymour Hersh said that, didn't he? And the Pentagon said, oh, no, this was an isolated incident, and these were just out-of-control troops. No, this wasn't a pattern or a practice or anything. And then the court ordered them to turn over the pictures, and there were, lo and behold, thousands and thousands and thousands of photographs of torture and torment and abuse and death and damnation and mayhem at out of George Bush's torture and rape rooms. So while dear leader may want you to think that Seymour Hersh is just crazy, he's crazy. He's not. And the surest sign, the very surest sign that George Bush is going to kill somebody, well, you know what that sign is. It's when he starts talking peace.
You said we're headed to war in Iraq. I don't know why you say that. I hope we're not headed to war in Iraq. I'm the person who gets to decide, not you.
Had enough? Of course, we also know that from the Hersh article, and if you want to go read it, it's available to you at truthout.org. It's long, lots of details, lots of sources inside the Pentagon. They want to use their bunker-busting nuclear bomb. They want to make a first nuclear strike because it's the only way they think they can penetrate the bunker where there are just rooms full, according to what we're told, of course, of centrifuges for enriching the uranium that they need to build the bomb that they want to do what with? That's right. They hate us for our freedoms. They hate us because we have home mortgages. Yeah. We're going to do a first strike nuclear attack on Iran because we think that Iran wants to do a first strike nuclear attack. Read the Seymour Hersh article. This is Iraq with a different consonant. I'd like to buy a consonant, Pat. Never mind that Q, could I get an N? That's where we are. Only this time, we're not talking about invading a defenseless nation that's on its knees and can't fight back. No, this time, we're talking about starting a nuclear war. And I'm no general, and I'm not going to deliver anybody's orders or anything like that. I just ask a simple question. Is the threat of George Bush nuking another country that has not raised a finger to us enough to get a few million people in the streets of Washington, D.C. to stop this madness before he burns the world to a cinder? Is it enough? Bush voters, little lurker people, do you want to see your babies reduced to a shadow burned into a brick wall because someone will retaliate when George Bush makes his nuclear first strike? And I guess there's some banter out there today about the date of that nuclear first strike. Care to guess? You probably already know. Think about it. It's a couple of months away. June the 6th. And what year is this? Why, yes, it's 2006. 6-6-6. Would the apocalyptic freaks in the White House have that much of a taste for Armageddon? What do you think? Tell you what, let's take a break. I don't like the way this is playing out. I'm Bob Kincaid. Your phone calls are welcome. 877, the number 4, head on. 877-443-2366. I'd be interested in having your thoughts.
On the last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic. Mm.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Ann Braden.
You know, I got interested in Ann's life because of her being a white Southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss a tell.
FourthEstateRadio.com.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to.
A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of 6 U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the bald guy. You know, maybe they can do a UAE version of my grandmother is also my lover or something like that. Oh, that's just a...
Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
Broadcasting live from a remote, undisclosed location in the wilds of wonderful West Virginia. Head on with Bob Kincaid.
Some people say this town don't look good in snow.
I think Agnes is trying to keep me calm. Calm is good when you're contemplating a nuclear firestorm started by a pinheaded little barbarous, murderous little man who spent his youth sticking M80s in frogs and blowing them up just to see where their guts would go. It's the, you know, he M80s, nuclear bombs, it's all the same to him. They're cool and they go boom and they make a big flash and then there's gore and guts to look at. That's how it is with George Bush. Let's go to the phones. Jim is with us from Beckley. Hey, Jim, you're head on.
Oh, my God. I'm at an undisclosed location. And there they keep going about those blow-up dolls. Listen, if you hear something fly over your house, it's my blow-up doll that just went out the window. Inflatable beauty. I blew up your body, and you blew my mind. Well, on a more serious note, dear friend, speaking of fearless leader, I was having a conversation with a good friend of mine, and he was talking about Bush being like Hitler. And I said, this guy reminds me a lot more of Joseph Stalin. And I'll tell you why.
Okay.
You know, both men were plotters. Neither men were that intellectually bright. They neither spoke their own native tongues very well. I mean, Stalin was Georgian, and he spoke Russian with a thick accent.
Mm-hmm.
And he even spoke it incorrectly. But nobody ever laughed at him. And he was the kind of person who, as a plotter, was one, he, and I refer to him as the mountaineer of the Kremlin, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And he was never particularly brilliant. A lot of Russian revolutionaries like Trotsky and some of the others who found themselves at the in the Lubyanka or the Russian prison,
mm-hmm.
the tallest building in Siberia, because from its basement you could either see Siberia or eternity, you know, laughed at Stalin. But he plotted, and he may not have spoken Russian very well, and he may not have been a brilliant flash across the horizon the way Trotsky was. But look what he did.
Oh, yeah.
With his plot, with his just plotting, and plotting, and plotting, and plotting. And, you know, I really think that this man speaks in what I consider, and I'm going to coin a new word here, maybe it's already been said, he speaks antonymically. When he says something, I'm going to believe the opposite.
Yes.
And
he
always,
and he means the opposite, too.
And basically, always, yeah, I know. And what he does, when he starts to make some kind of policy speech or something, there's always this justification that precedes it or is part of the policy speech, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That is the antecedent before some type of decisive military action to justify what he's done. Now, in this respect, he resembles Adolf Hitler. He did the same thing. Every time he made a move on any country, he would get into this long harangue about how this had become intolerant, that had become intolerant, and this is the reason for the sake of this, that, and the other. He had to do this, that, and the other. Do you follow what I'm saying, Bob?
Yes, I very much do.
And I guess, in a way, he sort of takes the attributes of both men. He's not the orator that Hitler was. And he can't make spellbinding speeches the way Hitler did. But he certainly, by plotting and by being sort of kind of a good old boy and using very slow but very tenacious methods. And having the people underneath them to do it and being willing to sacrifice anybody.
Well, and if, have you read the Seymour
Hersh? High water.
Have you read the Seymour Hersh article yet, Jim?
No, I haven't.
Truthout.org. You can go and read it. And what you know, what you find out in it. One of the remarks that's made is by a senior Pentagon official who says, you know, it's the civilian leadership. The civilian military leadership is all just a titter to go and have themselves a nuclear war.
Well. Now, we've talked about this before, and we're talking about airstrikes on Iran from Afghanistan and Iraq, correct?
Well, and from the carrier groups that we have cruising back and forth in the Persian Gulf and the Indian Ocean.
Well, basically, you know, you're talking about a number of hits on these perceived facilities which they're building. And but don't these people have any sense of restraint? For example, the way Kennedy did back in 1962?
No, they don't, Jim. They
I mean, honest to God, don't. I mean, now, Kennedy had, let's see, he had, what was his name, Curtis LeMay in there, telling him to let him have it.
Yeah.
And Curtis LeMay, of course, you know, just enjoyed bombing the hell out of people for the hell out of it. Of course,
I always thought Curtis LeMay was the model for General Buck Turgidson in Dr. Strangelove.
Yeah, basically he was. And LeMay was not real happy when, of course, he was not, his advice was not accepted. But apparently, the senior leadership in the Pentagon is so intimidated by Rumsfeld that they can't really do anything to stop him. I don't know.
That's a terrifying thought.
Well,
because Rumsfeld is crazy.
Of course he is.
I mean, Rumsfeld is like James Bond movie villain crazy.
Well, I mean, they're talking. Rumsfeld is the kind of person who I really believe is, you know, he believes that a tactical nuclear war is possible, and that losses that may come from its escalation are acceptable.
Well, that's
now, that's just the impression I get.
Well, there has always been a branch of thought in this country that has talked about, and you just used the phrase, Jim, acceptable losses from a nuclear exchange.
I mean, and they will couch it in the terms, better a horrible ending than a horror without end. And that's how they're going to try to sell it to the American people.
But why? Are the Jim,
to sell it.
Jim, are the American people so absolutely dirt crazy stupid that they think that there's any way that Iran could get a nuclear weapon to North America?
If they were told so, yeah. Because the way Goebbels used to tell the German people about stuff he told them about, he would make speeches before these people. Even in the most impossible of circumstances, when the war was being hopelessly lost, he would have them so fired up, he even said, I could have them jumping off the top of this building. So, yes, I believe that we are that susceptible. I hate to tell you. I take no pleasure in having this conversation with you tonight.
Jim, I'm scared to death. You're right.
And, you know, I'll tell you something. I've always been this way. I basically expect the worst and hope for the best. That way I'm not terribly disappointed.
No, that's kind of how I live.
But from what I am seeing and what I have witnessed in witnessing the repetitive behavior of certain individuals, that the outcome is almost
foregone.
Question.
Well, do you remember, what was it? Was it the 2003 State of the Union speech where he said, and I want to give a message tonight to the people of Iraq. America is your friend. And you know, it wasn't 2 months before the bombs were falling.
Well, I mean, you know, that's what Hitler said to the sedate Germans. And he said that to so many people. He said, I'm your friend. I really want to go in and I want to liberate you. Or that's what Soviets would say to people. They want to liberate people.
Well, see, and that's the comparison, because Bush did that in 2003, or maybe, I think it was 2003. And then, if you know, the State of the Union speech this past January, he did the same thing. He said, I want to deliver a message to the people of Iran. We are not your enemy. I mean, that's a kiss of death.
Well, with friends like us, they don't need an enemy.
That's the honest to God's truth,
and,
Jim.
You know, as far as I'm concerned, this thing with Mexico and this immigration thing, it is nothing more than a red herring.
Sure. And that's why I've been saying all along, it's phony.
While other forces are at work in other parts of the world. I mean, this is to the 2006 election what gay marriage was in 2004. Except this time we have more sinister implications because of the Iranian question.
Well, is the world going to sit by, Jim, and let us drop a nuclear bomb on somebody?
What can they do? What can they do?
Well, I mean, I think North Korea is probably crazy enough to, melt. How about melting the North Slope ice fields or oil fields? They could do that.
I don't think that would stop them. I think that would probably galvanize them into even more draconian action, to be honest with you.
God, it's terrifying.
I mean, this is the superpower of the world ever since 1991. And, you know, as long as we had another superpower on the other side of the world sort of keeping us in check and balance, you know, there was a modicum of sanity about the whole thing. You follow us?
Yeah, I do. I do.
But now, we're the only kid on the block, and we feel like that with our doctrine of preemption and our so-called self-righteousness, which is really nothing but greed. So let's face it, Bob, they don't want Iraqi oil. They want their oil to become more and more valuable, the ones that they've got in Saudi Arabia, the ones they've got here.
I think you're right. Jim, we got to roll. Thank you for your thoughts.
Sorry to doubt that.
No, it's got to happen. Take care.
You too.
Bye now. And a quick break. We'll come back. More of your phone calls. Light them up. 877, the number 4, head on. I'm Bob.
Head on with Bob Kincaid.
Lottie in the chat room has fixed himself some stuffed pork chops with apple raisin walnut chutney.
You, me, Grace, Rama.
Mango chutney.
Hey, speaking of that,
it's all you need.
Mustard seed?
Mustard seed, yeah. That article.
It's not the
there.
Same as mustard gas.
Well, it's pretty close. Mustard gas.
Join
mustard
Grace
gas.
And Rama, homebodies, Sunday evenings, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network. It's food for thought.
Hi, this is Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man's thinking man, and I'm sick and tired of watching corporate thugs steal our money, steal our freedoms, and use propaganda to turn us against each other. We live in a world that's turned against working people in every country, and I say enough is enough. It's time to take back the airwaves, time for us to stand up to corporate power and corporate greed, time to put aside all our differences and face our common enemies, and time to take back control of our government. So if you feel like I do, then I want you to join me for the premiere of the Cup of Joe radio show Saturday, April 8th, 2006, from 8 to 10 p.m. on the Head On Radio Network. It's the show your bosses don't want you to listen to. It's the wave of the future, the voice of the resistance, the truth that will set you free. So join me via screaming audio Saturday, April 8th, from 8 to 10 p.m. on the Head On Radio Network.
A man who has the heart of a conservative, pickled in a jar on his desk. It's Bob Kincaid.
Okay, we're back. 26 minutes before the hour on this Monday evening. Mondays are usually my favorite day of the week. But I have, look, I grew up in the Cold, you know, in the Cold War for the most all intents and purposes. I grew up with the threat of mutual assured destruction. And it was that mad doctrine that kept both the United States and the Soviet Union, to a large part, rocked back on their heels. Jim's right. It doesn't exist anymore. I am frightened that we have a man in Washington, D.C., who, if he is not stopped and removed from office legally and peacefully, will turn this sweet little blue-green orb of a time machine hurtling through the universe into a piece of charcoal. That's where he is, because he's out there telling us, we're using diplomacy. No, we've been down this road before, George. Antonymically. Cool word, Jim. Antonymically. He speaks the opposite of his mind. Let's go to our buddy Andy calling from Wales. Good morning, Andy.
No, it's still good night, man. It's 25 to 1 in the morning. Don't give me good morning. how's things, man? Are you okay?
No, I'm scared to death.
Well, yeah. I did see a report from a clip from Bush saying, we're not going to nuke them. But that's because we've just had a report that apparently a bunch of dudes in your Department of Defense resigned in protest at the possibility of nuking Iran.
Well, did the resignations go down? I mean, the Seymour Hersh report says that they were threatening to.
Well, we've got in the Sunday Times, which is fairly respectable, well, pretty respectable, said that it was like 28 threatened to, and some number of them actually did it. But the good thing about that is that there's a whole bunch in there that didn't even put their names up that are definitely waiting for the thing to go down, and then they're going to pull a gun and go, you press that button, I'll blow your head across this console.
You know, Jack Straw didn't help out any.
Jack Straw's... I don't even want to use those words. I know we can say whatever we like, but Agnes is listening, and I would go down in her estimation if I used those words.
And you don't want to do that.
No, well, you know, I don't want to use those words in front of my mum or my grandmother or Agnes, you know?
Yeah. Bless your heart. But no, he came out, after the Seymour Hersh report started hitting the circles. Jack Straw came out and said, oh, that's just crazy.
Jack Straw's a...
Yeah, I know. But the fact of the matter is, he'd already had the lie put to him because, what was it, Thursday night? I think it was Wednesday night. I had a story about the fact of a meeting that had gone down the previous Monday in the upper levels of the British government. Basically, a bunch of high and mighties getting together and saying, whatever shall we do about the United States, they're going to go rogue on us again.
Yeah, basically... Well, you know, there's a whole bunch of people who've done very well for Britain out of manipulating the United States gently away from all-out nightmares of war. and they're kind of worried. Because, I mean, you know, we have that famous thing of Margaret Thatcher telling George H.W. to get some balls and do what he had to do, which I hate Thatcher and I hate what happened. I hate the whole situation. The first Gulf War was all about, well, oil, essentially, anyway. But, you know, as for every one of those that we've done as a prime minister, there's been like 20 or 30, please don't send the weapons into that country, you're going to destabilise the entire world. And, you know, we've kind of managed to keep you guys out of things, because I give British politicians their due, they kind of know how to talk to people, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And that's why I'm saying that... You know, Jack wasn't helping anybody. Just
no. Well, I mean, you know, if we had someone like Jack Straw back during the Cold War, we'd all be gone. I wouldn't have even been born.
I think you're right.
Because you know, it was people like him, and even Winston Churchill. You know, people like Winston Churchill and so forth that managed to get the two sides, like Soviet Russia and America, even talking. Then there was that crazy dude of yours that wanted to carpet bomb Russia with nuclear bombs. I can't remember his name, General something or other. You know, one of those nutter types, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. That may have been Curtis LeMay.
Yeah, that was it, LeMay. Because he ended up in Vietnam, didn't he? Ordered the mass bombing of North Vietnam and killed millions of civilians or something.
No, yeah, he was everything that, who was the British guy that did the bombing of Dresden?
Bomber Harris.
Yeah, Bomber Harris.
Yeah, but at least we call him Bomber Harris.
Yeah, well, we just, yeah, Curtis LeMay, people just sort of, you know, you mention him and anybody who still recognizes his name just sort of rolls their eyes.
Yeah, I mean.
Crazy.
But that's the point. I mean, you know, his generation are back. You know, Donald Rumsfeld is a Curtis LeMay type. I mean.
Yes, he is.
Wait. Rumsfeld doesn't understand nuclear technology.
Well, and the other thing he doesn't understand is that everybody is not necessarily honest.
No,
you know,
no.
You only find out where the really, really super secret treaties are when the shooting starts. And I wouldn't be surprised if there was some sort of treaty between, say, how about Iran and China?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know that the most likely course of action, of course, though, is that a nuclear bomb might go off. If it does, then nobody will nuke America immediately. Everybody will wait. The first nuclear bomb won't, because it won't hit Russia, it won't hit China, therefore their automated systems won't go off. Everyone will be really tense. And then Iran will start setting off explosive devices, probably, you know, as dirty as they can and as big as they can make them, all over the United States and anywhere the United States has an influence. You think Iraq's a civil war now? Bomb Iran, see what happens to Iraq, because every American soldier is now under direct threat. It's not, you might get blown up in an IED, you might have a pot shot taken at you, you might get a mortar drop on you. It's, you're dead.
At that point, we're everybody's enemy.
Yeah, yeah. And, basically, I think you can kiss any help from the British soldiers in the South goodbye, because they're going to be out of there, and they're not going to wait for you guys, because, well, let's be honest, every time the Americans and the British operate together, your guys shoot our guys. En masse.
Oh, God,
the highest number of casualties, the biggest cost of casualties in the Gulf War Mark I was Americans shooting up our armored personnel carriers.
Oh, no, I didn't.
Well, we lost 23 blokes in one incident because of some dude from Texas Air National Guard and an Apache helicopter decided to open up with his cannon.
Oh, I remember that incident, yeah.
Yeah, but they tried to make it, it's only like 3 or 4 were wounded. But they killed like 23 guys and wounded like 50 or 60 others because they were just launching everything at this group of British marked up vehicles. I mean, you know, the same sort of stuff happened to a smaller degree this time around. British soldiers don't like American soldiers at all. They're scared of them. And, you know, I don't think it's going to turn into a full all-out thermonuclear war unless Bush decides to nuke China or Russia or maybe even North Korea. But if he attacks Iran with a nuclear weapon, it's just going to be the most disastrous terrorist assault on the United States. You thought Al-Qaeda were dangerous, if they even exist. Wait until all the people. I mean, look at Hezbollah, financed by Iran, very successful group.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they're on the ballot in Lebanon now, are they?
Yeah, they're like one of the more powerful groups. You know, you can just believe that the whole Middle East will stop shipping oil within weeks, months at the most.
And of course, you know, that doesn't bother George Bush because that means the prices go up and that means they get richer.
Well, no, because the prices go up, but as soon as oil stops shipping from the Middle East, Britain and other countries that produce oil will nationalize their industries again and seize the assets of companies like BP and Shell, because we simply will not stand the profiteering, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So all the North Sea oil out of Britain and Denmark and Norway will be for us and Europe only. But we'll keep on good relations with Russia. I mean, the only people who will really suffer, apart from the poor people who are dying, will be the Americans.
I fear you're right.
Your economy can't hank it. Your economy simply can't take it.
We're in no position to.
Right.
We're junkies.
Absolutely. I mean, you've got no fallback position in America. You know, here in the UK, okay, it'd be a mess if we couldn't get oil for cars and stuff. But a great deal of our train system is electrified, and given the need, we'd be able to have a transport system up and running in a couple of months that would get people around en masse, because we'd be able to switch over to hydro power and solar power.
We can't.
No, because you don't even have a train system anymore, do you?
No, well, I mean, you know, I want to, you know, I want to go to my county courthouse. I'm 15 miles. You know, it's that there's no way around it. There's no public transportation.
Right. Got to have a car.
Yep.
Or a horse.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Invest in horses. Yeah. People keep saying invest in silver, invest in... No, get a hold of a stud farm and put a share in.
Yeah, no kidding.
They're going to be valuable in the USA.
Yeah, and a couple of draft mules, maybe a couple of oxen.
Yeah.
Well, it's it, you know, again, it goes back to that Einstein quote, Andy, about what was it? I don't know how they'll fight World War III, but I do know how they'll fight World War IV with sticks and stones.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's where we're headed. And
well, yeah, I mean, it's frankly ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, the whole sort of thinking about the whole Cold War and thermonuclear disaster, oh, we'll go live in a bunker for a few months and then we'll come out and all the proles will be dead, but that's okay. It's like, guys, months.
Years, decades, yeah, decades, centuries.
Well, yeah, I mean, decades where it hasn't really, like, been exactly explosive and stuff. And we're talking, well, significant proportions of the time the Earth's been in existence for where the bombs actually go off, aren't we?
Well,
okay. Half a million years? Million years?
Yeah, and this stuff blows around. I mean, if...
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the stuff that won't be so condensed, and that's only what 25.
Well, look what happened. Look what happened with the fallout from Chernobyl.
Well, yeah, it landed in Wales.
I know.
And look at the depleted uranium from Iraq. Landed all over the UK and in a broad swathe of Europe. Thanks, George.
Yeah.
Thanks, George.
Really appreciate it.
If I get cancer, I'm suing the U.S. Department of Defense.
Do please.
I'm going to do it through the European Court of Human Rights. I'd like to see them win there. And, of course, that'll be a test case.
Oh, well, no. See, we won't show up for that one because we won't acknowledge their jurisdiction.
Okay, but we'll just impound all the U.S. Equipment over here. That'd be worth a fair bob, wouldn't it?
I hope somebody is, in all seriousness, Andy, I hope someone is talking to George and talking to Rummy and Condi and Cheney and explaining them that they cannot do this.
Oh, God, I hope so, too. I mean, Tony won't. He's a wuss. You know, I mean, Tony Blair is just the most craven...
by the way, since you mentioned friends of George, it looks like another friend of George is going down.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know? I mean, have you been? Yeah, Berlusconi.
Oh God! Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know how it's going to turn out yet. Still, I mean, it's really, really tight. But next couple of hours will let us know. You know, so it's probably worth keeping a check on the channel and see what happens.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah, I hope so.
Do they have Diebold machines in Italy? I don't know.
No, it's a paper ballot.
Well, then they might actually have a fair election. What a charming idea.
He changed the rules 6 months ago from first past the post to proportional representation because that took his name off the ballot and put a load of flags, like for each party's flag, so that, you know, voters weren't necessarily voting for him. He tried to take it away from looking at him and move it towards a kind of, oh, no, it's between the centre-left and the right-wing parties, that's what it really is, instead of actually, is Berlusconi going to go to, like, court and possibly prison? You know, because that's basically what's going to happen if he doesn't win.
God, that would be nice. Andy, we got to roll along. Sorry we weren't right here Friday, but I'm glad to hear from you tonight.
That's cool, man. One quick thing.
Yes, please.
Two quick things. I'm actually DJing next Saturday. Would it be cool to put my setup on your website if I record it?
Oh, sure.
Cool, excellent. You can all listen to some proper technique. And secondly, I'm going to put up something in the chat room in a minute. You guys need to open it up and have a look. It's the list of the moral values of the Republicans. I've shown the guys in there a couple of times now, but I'm going to keep putting it up. This is the most amazing list in the world.
Oh, cool. I look forward to seeing it, and we'll share it with everybody else.
Yeah, do it, man. Do it.
All right. Thanks, Andy.
Take care, man.
Bye now.
Bye.
Reminds me of something. Andy's talk.
We are the origins of war. Not history's forces, nor the times, nor justice, nor the lack of it, nor causes, nor religions, nor ideas, nor kinds of government, nor any other thing. We are the killers. We breed wars. For the love of God, can't we love one another just a little?
For the love of God. For the love of God. Or not. This is. I'm 43 years old. I never in my life dreamed that I would be thinking about stuff like this at this time in my life. Nuclear war.
It would not be difficult, my Führer. nuclear reactors could... I'm sorry, Mr. President. Nuclear reactors could provide power almost indefinitely. Greenhouses could maintain plant life. Animals could be bred and slaughtered.
Well, I've been to one world fair, a picnic, and a rodeo, and that's the stupidest thing I ever heard come over a set of earphones.
Ain't it, though? Ain't it indeed? Let's go to our good friend David in Maine. Hey, David, you're head on.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
The more I do to you, the less you believe it's me. Do you know who said that?
No.
Dr. Mengele.
Dr. Oh, my God, Joseph Mengele?
Yes, and it's appropriate now.
Sure it is. A lot of this stuff that we thought was just crazy evil is suddenly appropriate again.
But before I begin, I'd like to start on a lighter topic.
Okay, do please.
I want to say this, and I've been saying this for a long time. Alex Jones is not your friend. Please repeat that after me, you progressives. Alex Jones is not your friend. I'm going to state a case that shows that exactly. He went after that teacher who said that they should reduce the population.
Yeah.
And he connected it to eugenics to Hitler. Amazing. How do you do it, Alex?
It is. But, you know, there's a... I don't know. He goes places I can't go.
I know, and that's what I'm saying. People have to understand that Alex is not a progressive. I would coin him this. A righteous doom merchant.
Well, he does. I mean, that's his shtick, isn't it?
That's it. That's how you make money on the GCN network. You got to have something bad happening all the time. Otherwise, why tune in?
Yeah.
So now onto the topic of du jour. But before that, Signs of the Apocalypse, Ann Coulter's book is coming out, 666.
Oh, I know. And you know that's intentional, David. As sure as God made little green apples, that's intentional.
I think the best analogy that someone made for Bush today is by Marty Kaplan. He didn't compare him to Stalin. He didn't compare him to Hitler. He compared him to Superman's villain, Mistleplick.
Oh, God.
Who is from another dimension. I don't know if you know who that is.
Yeah, vaguely, yes.
Yeah, he's from another dimension. And he operates in a different way. Everything he thinks is strangely bizarre to everyone else, and he plays on the minds of others psychologically. And he thinks it's funny. So I think Bush is our Mistleplick. And the only way to send him back, do you remember the only way to send him back?
No.
Is he has to say his name backwards.
Oh, is that even possible?
I know. Is it even possible that George W. Bush says his name backwards?
The Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, for God's sakes, please, Beetlejuice.
Beetlejuice. Michael Keaton, we know you made a bad movie called Multiplicity, but please come back for a sequel. Or at least as Batman, without the erotic nipples.
Yeah, I don't. No nipples on Batman, please.
Yeah, I know. They made a mistake on that one. I think that was Joel Schumacher who did that. He ruined Batman. Anyways, he put Arnold Schwarzenegger. And isn't it appropriate that before he becomes governor, he's in a character called the Terminator and Dr. Freeze?
Yeah. Look, it's Ronald Reagan. It's Ronald Reagan with a Teutonic accent. You know, it's just, you know, another B-movie player running California.
You know, there's another story about a politician from Arizona. I don't know if you heard about this, but he got his son off a rape charge.
Yeah, oh, God. I have no idea how to pronounce it. What is it, Yavapai County?
Yeah, Ryan Bennett.
God, I hate to say this. They anally assaulted 28 young men.
Was it 28?
Okay, 18. Was it 18 or 28? It was one or the other.
I don't know. I thought it was just one kid, but now.
Oh, no. That's what's so disgusting about this thing. The one kid is the son of a Senate bigwig in the state of Arizona. He and his buddy, and they call it, you know, it was just a hazing ritual at like a summer camp or something. They anally raped, 18 kids. They were charged with doing 9 of them and pled down to 1 and won't do jail time.
Sick. Sick, sick, sick.
Well, you know, what do you want for the son of a Republican? The Republicans are the most sick, perverted people in the entire United States, David.
I would have to agree with you. You know, going to the topic of du jour, obviously, today, which is Iran, or as we'll be calling after we bomb them, Iran. I think the problem is that I don't really see a nuclear winter for us yet. I think of God as the ultimate psych-out master. I really do. And I think that God really gets adrenaline off the fact that he likes, I mean, I would, psyching your creations. If you had nothing better to do, oh, what can I do to make these guys get excited and charged up?
Oh, okay. Well, no, we're in a Star Trek episode now, David.
Maybe.
No, this is the thing that feeds on fear. Remember, and they thought Scotty committed a murder, and it turned out it was this creature that had been Jack the Ripper and every other heinous killer throughout the universe, and he winds up in the computer system yelling, Regic, Regic, Regic. Yeah, this is that one. Oh, God, my science fiction upbringing is catching up with me, David.
Well, sometimes it's so appropriate where you, time you are now.
Well, I keep saying, there's a growing list of books that I read as a kid going, oh, wow, this is interesting. And it turns out that at the same time, people like George Bush's handlers were reading it and saying, you know, we could get away with this.
Well, you know, every time I look outside and I look at these people in the streets or just look on TV or just look in general to the public's conscience, I compare them to the doldrums from the Phantom Tollbooth. Oh, why bother? We're fine, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, look at the new animated version of Philip K. Dick's A Scanner Darkly is coming out.
Oh, they're animating it?
I was told it was animated.
Hmm.
Somehow or another, but I can't see how you could pull it off without animating it. But you know, that stuff has largely come true. You know, the
maybe sci-fi does prevail in the new century. I don't know, but I have I have an actual idea for Head On that I think is a good idea if we survive the nuclear winter.
Okay.
You were talking about the Mayan calendar.
Yeah.
What if you were actually to broadcast a show at an Incan pyramid someplace? You have like 6 or 7 years to prepare.
You might be surprised to know that we're already researching means of doing remote broadcasts.
There you go. I think that's a good, like, a promotion.
December 23rd, 2012, from the top of the pyramid at Chichen Itza.
Yeah, and you got six years to prepare.
And we're going to work on it, David. We got to hit the top of the hour, though. Thanks for all the ideas.
No problem.
All right, we'll see you later.
Later.
Bye now. See ya? This is radio. Bob, pay attention, for God's sakes. We come back. More of your thoughts if you want to, 877, the number 4, Head On, 877-443-2366. Email's easy too, bob@headonradio.com. I am Bob Kincaid, and, you know, I'm sorry to start Monday on a downer, but this little weasel in the White House scares the bejesus out of me. We'll be back.
I'm just a kid.
I'm 6.
I'm 9.
I'm 4.5.
And I've got asthma.
You know just how upset I can get when I have an asthma attack.
And I know that you want to do all that you can do to help me.
But you might not know
about all the different stuff that can make me have an asthma attack.
are all the simple things you can do to fight my asthma.
You can fight it with a bear.
You can fight it with a duck.
You can fight it with a wrench.
Put my teddy bear in the freezer to wipe out dust mites.
Dry off rubber duckies and fix leaks to get rid of mold.
Because mold can start my asthma attacks too.
Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Thanks for doing all you can to help me out.
Because I don't want to feel like a fish with no water.
Head on Radio Network News, I'm John Fox. Critics of the Bush administration in the U.S. expressed alarm about reports that George Bush is mulling military options to knock out Iran's nuclear program. Retired General Anthony Zinni, the former head of U.S. Central Command, told U.S. television he had no detailed knowledge of the alleged military plans, but a preemptive strike against Iran's nuclear program would be extremely risky. Any military plan involving Iran is going to be very difficult. We should not fool ourselves to think it would just be a strike and then it will be over, Zinni said. General Zinni went on to say, the Iranians will retaliate. They have many possibilities in an area where there are many vulnerabilities. From our troop positions to the oil and gas in the region that have been interrupted, to attacks on Israel, to the conduct of terrorism. Tens of thousands of protesters turned out Monday in small towns and big cities across the United States demanding that undocumented immigrants get a chance to live the American dream. On what is dubbed a National Day of Action for Immigration Justice, demonstrators shook up the streets from Atlanta, Georgia to South Bend, Indiana. In Lexington, Kentucky, they waved signs that read, "We were all immigrants once, and we are not terrorists," the Associated Press has reported. Hundreds of Hurricane Katrina evacuees from as far as Texas and Georgia have signed up to board buses to return to Louisiana to vote in the future of New Orleans. The evacuees are returning to cast early votes Monday in elections for mayor and city council, the first major test of the city's post-Katrina electoral system. "The busing is now practical and symbolic," said Kevin Whelan, spokesman for the Association of Community Organizations for Reform Now, or ACORN. "Part of it is obviously turning out real voters, but it's still obviously a small percentage of the entire electorate," he said. Displaced residents can vote Monday through Thursday or Saturday at early voting stations in Lake Charles, Shreveport, New Orleans, and seven other cities around the state. The offices will be closed for Good Friday. California water officials took advantage of a weekend lull in the stormy weather to patch weak spots in the state's levee system as more rain loomed ahead. After the rainiest March on record, many reservoirs in California's Central Valley are groaning at full capacity and 10 more days of rain are forecast. Rodney Meyer, acting chief of the California Division of Flood Management, said, quote, "We saw in New Orleans the storm was coming in. It was known days ahead, and we're not sure they took all the steps they could have." This is news on the Horn.
The major record labels say that downloading music from the internet is stealing, stealing, stealing. But according to these people, making a mixtape for your friend is stealing too. So is making a tape of a radio show.
We play the songs that sound more like everyone else than anyone else.
When a rock band plays an AC/DC cover at a bar that doesn't pay ASCAP, that's stealing. Or have you ever sung Happy Birthday to your friend at a restaurant?
Warning!
Happy Birthday is copyrighted, so if you're singing in a public place, you'd better be paying royalties, or you'll be stealing music. Does all this stuff about stealing music sound absurd? Would you rather have a world where our music culture wasn't the intellectual property of five corporations? Then stop giving them your money, and make sure your friends and family don't either. Better yet, try burning them a CD. If we pull the plug on major labels, music gets better. Find out more about what you can do. Check out downhillbattle.org.
Sydney Morning Herald reports that the Cole inquiry into the Australian Wheat Board payoff scandal to the Saddam regime has heated up. John Howard is likely to appear as a witness on Thursday following Mr. Vail, who testified for 85 minutes, often replying, quote, "I can't recall," unquote, or, quote, "I don't have an answer," unquote, when asked why he failed to act on or was not told about numerous warnings that the wheat exporter was paying kickbacks to Saddam Hussein. Counsel assisting the inquiry, John Agus, pressed Mr. Vail, the trade minister, over why he asked Australia's embassy in Washington to lobby the then U.S. Secretary of State, Colin Powell, relying on AWB's denials without conducting an independent inquiry into the allegations. Mr. Agus asked, quote, "You were vouching the word and the good name of Australia. Is that correct?" Unquote. Mr. Vail replied, saying he relied on his department's advice. Indicted fraudster Tom DeLay may have put off his resignation for the money. John Ferry, a former aide to DeLay, said, quote, "He needed to raise money for the defense fund. That was the bottom line," unquote. John Amato today from Crooks and Liars adds, quote, "In other words, DeLay was raising money from suckers, supporters, under false pretenses. He asked contributors for financial support, telling them that he needed the money to help with his campaign, when in reality, DeLay knew he'd have to resign and he wanted the donations for his legal defense. DeLay's con is legal, but obviously dishonest," unquote. The Sydney Morning Herald reports today, the U.S. is conducting a propaganda campaign to magnify the role of the leader of Al-Qaeda in Iraq, according to internal military documents and officers familiar with the program. The effort has raised his profile in a way that some military intelligence officers believe may have overstated his importance and helped the Bush administration tie the war to organizations responsible for the September 11 terrorist attacks. This is the news on the Head On Radio Network. From Sydney, I'm John Fox.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're Head On with Bob Kincaid.
Okay, so let's do another hour. What do you say? I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On, your nightly confrontation with the facts. Conversation radio in the evening at its very finest. Because, frankly, we've invented conversation radio here at the Head On Radio Network. It's the byword of all of the shows. Shows like mine. Shows like Fourth Estate Radio. Did you catch the Cup of Joe show's premiere Saturday night? It went very well. Our pal Joe Vecchio is definitely a welcome addition to the Head On Radio Network family. Excellent shows last night by Grace and Rama and by Bruce Birch with All Things. And every last one of them, conversation radio. Because America doesn't need a good talking to. America needs a good talking with. Because good talk is mighty hard to find these days. Let's go to the phones. Our dear friend Sue from Wales is with us. Hey, Sue, you're Head On. How you doing, dear?
Oh, okay, in under circumstances. Bob, how are you?
I'm okay. I mean, I'm kind of nervous about, you know, nuclear war and so forth, but, you know, who wouldn't be?
Well, yeah, I tend to agree. I mean, I listen to your conversation with Jim last week about this, and I think unless someone tries to stop him, he's going to do it. I think he's itching to do it.
I think, we're talking about a psychopath and a sociopath. This man has nothing in common with a member of the human race. He has no human sympathy, no human decency.
Well, you can tell that. I remember the thing where they were executing that woman.
Yes, I know who you're talking. Carla Faye Tucker.
Yeah.
And he laughed about it.
Yeah, I will never forget that.
No, and again, I'm not just making stuff up, Sue, when I talk about what he used to do to the frogs.
Well, no, I've read up exactly on the kind of chap he is. And it worries me because he's somebody that's never had to take any responsibility for anything in his life.
No.
He's got no idea of, you know, he's not had the chance to learn any lessons.
No. Well, and he doesn't want to learn any.
No. And, you know, I found your 666 thing a bit funny. You know, because I've been doing some reading up on these, is it Dominionists?
Oh, yes, the scary lot.
That is scary stuff.
It's terrifying. And these people are very, very real. And and most people by now, I hope, know who the Dominionists are. Yeah, they're the, you know, this is James Kennedy down at Coral Snake Ministries in Florida. You know, it's Falwell, it's Robertson, it's Dr. James Dobson. These people all believe that they were born to rule the world because they joined up with the religion industry.
Well, they've corrupted the scriptures. I mean, I don't class myself as a Christian because I think it's got itself a bad name now. You know, I've got my own beliefs and that, but I refuse to put Christian on anything anymore. I just put none. You know, religion, none.
Right.
Because I believe religion has been corrupted and all over the world.
Well, you know, all this stuff.
Hijacked.
Yeah, it has been, Sue, and this stuff about the Gospel of Judas that was unveiled last week, it makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, I didn't catch that, Bob.
If you go to the National Geographic website, there's a lot about it because they were the ones who unveiled it. It's another one of those Gnostic Gospels.
Because I think a lot of people forget that. You know, it was man that chose what went into the Bible, and there was an awful lot of it that didn't get in there.
Precisely.
They totally cut that. There was one written, was it supposed to be Mary Magdalene?
Yeah, the Gnostic Gospels are full of information about Mary Magdalene. The most famous Gnostic Gospel of all is the Gospel of St. Thomas.
Yeah.
Which has a lot of commonality with Matthew, Mark, and Luke. But what it boils down to is some of these books were a direct threat to the male-dominated, misogynistic hierarchy established by the early so-called church fathers.
Yeah. And, this is something I found because, when people are in times of stress or hopelessness, that they tend to get drawn into religion, and I went there once, and it was with the Mormons. And I'll never forget my son. It was about 6 years ago, 6 or 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember my son because the boys go into this priesthood thing or whatever.
Yeah.
And my David came out and he says, "Mom," he said, "they're awfully sexist."
Bless your heart, you must have done a wonderful job with him.
Yeah, because he turned around and he says, "It's very sexist." And I mean, I fell out with him pretty quick because I said, "I don't want to learn, you know, all this homemaking stuff." I said, "If you can teach me how to lay bricks, I'm up for it." But, you know, I'm not much on all of this embroidery and patchwork and all that sort of stuff of potting up, you know, jam and putting dinner on the table for people.
Exactly.
You know, something practical. But I heard Andy earlier on, and they're worried about Tony Blair, because I'm very worried about him.
How so?
He's got this dodgy religious streak as well, but I don't think he'd be able to take it, because I think if we were being drawn into this, I do believe that there would be a vote, call for a vote of no confidence in Parliament, and they would vote no confidence to take the government down.
Well, it needs to happen, but you know, you're between a rock and a hard place there, because you know, look who you get if you get rid of Tony. You've got a crowd of people. You've got a crowd of people across the aisle from Tony Blair who think that it's not necessarily a good thing to have national health care for everybody in the UK.
Yeah, but we've also got the third party, which was coming up really well at the last showing. You know, we have got another option to go to.
That's true. That's true.
Because the Tories, they're working really, really hard to try and come back, but people have never forgotten Thatcher. they totally destroyed the social structure of this country when they had Thatcher, you know, the greed of the 80s, and people won't forget that in a hurry. And, I mean, you look at how long the Liberals, who used to be the Whigs, I think it was, how long they were out. They've been out of power since, what, before the war?
Mm-hmm.
Because people remember in this country, we don't forget. And, you know, I think we've got some hope with having a third party with such a strong showing. Because they control, a lot of the local government is controlled by the Liberal Democrats. My local council, I vote Liberal Democrat in every election because I know that Labour wouldn't have got in here. Because this has been a Tory seat for 87 years.
Oh, mercy.
Well, it's home of the British Army, you see, so...
Oh, sure.
And, but, you know, back on this nuclear what's it, have you got any gardening advice? Do you think Enviro Fleece will keep the radiation off my carrot? Well, come on, you know, you've got to look on the bright side, Bob.
Oh, I'm trying, but just the
one thing I worry about in America, because Andy was talking about transport, is that in America, did you ever watch that film, The End of Suburbia?
No.
Right. You need to watch that, Bob.
Okay.
The End of Suburbia, it's called. I know you can get it. I got it on BitTorrent.
All right. I'll look for it. I'll bet you, having heard you, that someone is probably sending me a link to it as we speak.
Yeah, and I tell you, you watch that because your whole structure of your society is predicated on oil.
Oh, yes, it is.
How will they get food around the country? What will happen to people in suburbia? How will they feed themselves? You know, if there is a shortage of oil, and I mean it will affect this country, because I mean I know for a fact that there are strawberries and carrots that are grown just down the road from me, and they are transported all the way up the country, you know, halfway up the country, and then they are transported back down here to my local supermarket.
Well, and the same. Well, it's the same thing on a much grander scale here. This, well, heavens, Sue, it's gotten to the point where a lot of our fruits and vegetables come from Chile and Peru.
Well, you have to remember as well that I think it was this last year was the first year that you imported more than you grew.
That's right.
And
that should
talk about corn for, you know, a substitute fuel. You're going to need that land to feed yourself.
Yes, you're absolutely right. On the other hand, as I said the other night, we subsidize tobacco farmers.
Yes.
There is perfectly beautiful land in Virginia and Kentucky and North Carolina and Tennessee that where people are paid to grow tobacco by the taxpayers.
Well, you know, I attribute to that because I smoke. How should no smoking go in anyway, Bob?
Well, there's no way to be but honest. I'm off the wagon.
I thought you might be. Have you ever read a book? It's by someone called Alan Carr.
No.
C-A-R-R-A-L-L-E-N-C-A-R-R.
Okay.
And I only say this to you, I mean, I've never read it myself, but I actually gave it to my youngest son. He gave up. I actually know three or four of my very close friends that are in journalism of all things, and they've given up.
Well, I haven't quit quitting. I'm going back around for it again very, very soon because I don't like it anymore. And I want to be free of it. I just happened to, it was another, those stupid nicotine patches. It was one of the, I woke up, the thing had fallen off in the night, and I was just jonesing like a monster.
Well, I was going to phone on Monday last, and I didn't because you sounded dangerous to be near. And I was sat here and my heart was bleeding for you, Bob, because I know what it feels like.
Oh, it was just awful, Sue. It was awful. But I'm going to go through it again. I've got to dig.
Sort of rolling your own instead of smoking those TaylorMades where they stick all the gunk in.
Yes, I have. Because it's dramatically less expensive, and it's funny they taste a lot different too. And if you set one down in the ashtray, it goes out.
Goes out. Well,
like tobacco's supposed to.
I've sold my own now for what must be 15 years. And if ever I call tailor-made, if I used to go out in the car, I always used to have a packet of tailor-made because they were easier.
Mm-hmm.
But if I smoke tailor-made more than 10, I can tell you I get my chest tightens up. I feel ill. I used to have, you know, the horrible hacking coughs you get in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
And since I've rolled my own, I don't get a cough in the winter. Like you say, they stick all that gunk in it.
Right.
And, but, you know, like you say, it's a lot cheaper. And I don't smoke as much.
I'd like to just be free of it.
Well, yes. But if the worst comes to worst, at least stop poisoning yourself totally.
Exactly. Hey, Sue, we've got to run on, dear.
I'm sorry, I'm off.
Oh, no. I love our conversations. Don't you ever apologize, okay?
And Alan Carr.
Alan Carr, I will look for it.
And you can smoke while you're reading the book. He encourages you to do that.
Okay, now I'm intrigued.
Yeah, it works on your mind.
Well, my mind needs some work. Sue, thank you very much, and have a wonderful, wonderful Tuesday.
I will, and God bless you all over there.
As well to you. Bye now.
Okay, bye.
And rolling along, first-time caller Andy from the Netherlands. Andy, you're head-on. Welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Bob. Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, please. Thank you for calling.
I have a statement.
Yes.
And then I have a question based on that statement.
Okay.
Statement is... by far, the majority of the American population lives in the industrialized North and the West Coast. And my question is, why does the South dominate American politics and American culture? That's my impression.
It's not a false impression, Andy. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that the South is dominated by religion.
Okay.
And as a consequence of that, religion, the two dominant voting groups in America are the religious right and the elderly. And if you can get a nexus between those two, then you have really, really got a juggernaut on your hands. And that group is more easily motivated in the geographic southern United States than anywhere else.
Okay, but still, I mean, I hear nothing about the North, like the culture, or the West Coast, really. Well, of course, Hollywood,
mm-hmm.
I hear a lot about. But I grew up myself in Michigan, and I really don't see any kind of that kind of culture reflected in politics or any kind of news we get in these parts, so to speak. And I just found it kind of strange.
Oh, that's very interesting for me, and it's kind of hard for me to look outside my own shell, simply because I was born and raised in the Deep South. I'm from Alabama.
Yeah.
And I'm still living in the South here in West Virginia. I'm awash. I'm immersed in that culture. So, does it have a tie-in with the Civil War and the failure of the lost cause and everything? It may very well.
Well, do you personally see any reflection of Northern culture or politics in the general debate?
The last of that was probably the Kennedys.
That was my impression.
Edmund Muskie from Maine brought some of that into the fray. You get a good taste of it with Tom Harkin from Iowa. I don't know. Maybe there's a certain dynamism to the South.
All the money and the power is still, you know, in New York and in the industrial belt and the West Coast.
You're absolutely right, and it goes to subsidize the South.
Exactly. I studied geography myself, and I know a bit about it. But, I mean, the South really is economically completely dead, aside from Texas.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I just find it very strange that the South has such a grip on the American people. Because most people, they live in the North and in the West Coast.
Yeah, now, there's been a considerable population boom. It was Kevin Phillips who identified it in the Nixon campaign in 1968. He was the first one to use the phrase Sunbelt to establish the, or to discuss the population shift southward and westward.
Okay.
And some of that is very real. I mean, the populations of southern cities, Charlotte, Nashville, Atlanta, even Birmingham, Memphis, has all just boomed in the last 25 years or so. Pardon?
Old people, older people, they vote generally more than younger people.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah, okay. I understand a bit more. Okay. Well, that was a decent answer to my question.
I try.
Can I say hi to the guys in the chat room?
Oh, you absolutely can.
I'm Bubba Love. Hi, guys. And see you in a couple of minutes.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you very kindly, Andy. Very good to hear from you.
Thank you for taking my call, and Godspeed to you.
I appreciate it. I hope we'll hear from you again sometime.
I'm sure you will.
Okay, take care.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Bye now. Our new friend Andy in the Netherlands. And by the way, if you haven't gone by the headonradionetwork.com chat room, do. It's just a doggone good time. Agnes and I, hang out in there when I'm producing the shows on the weekend, and it's fun to watch the interplay of a bunch of really smart liberal progressive people. And every now and then a lurker will try to sneak in, but we have some pretty seriously whip-cracking moderators, and we try to keep it a nice place to be. Sort of like, well, I had to go through and clean out the trash in the message boards at headonradio.com. That's a wonderful place to go. You know, the chat room is your thoughts just sort of bang, 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 real time. You can run by headonradio.com, the message boards there. You can register. That's free, and it's more, but you know, your thoughts stay there, yea, verily, forever and anon. So, you know, help yourself to both things. Have a blast. Let's see. Richard in North Carolina has been waiting and waiting. Hey, Richard, you're head on.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Doing good.
Hey, two quick things before I get into my point. I wanted to mention to the guys out there, check out madeinusa.com and nosweatapparel.com. They're both union sweatshop manufacturers of good clothes, and Made in USA will give you links to all sorts of American-made union shop goods, everything from clothes to just household appliances and stuff like that. They still exist.
And, well, I was familiar with nosweatshop.com. They do some great work.
Yeah, and Made in USA, it's a bunch of smaller companies. One is a Pointer brand, like jeans and overalls up there in Bristol, Tennessee. So
mm-hmm.
You still can find that stuff.
It's not oh, yeah, and, you know, the fascinating thing about that, Richard, is that you can buy American-made, very good, high-quality sportswear, polo shirts, jeans, that kind of thing, and at prices that are as good or better than the Chinese crap that you buy at Walmart.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that, you know, that tells us a boatload about the lies that are being promulgated by these people who say that we can't make our own anymore.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And there's a blurb on MadeInUSA.com that said if each American spent $20 a month in U.S.-made goods instead of imports, it would create 5 million new jobs.
Wow.
So I don't know if those numbers add up or not, but it's still something to think about.
Absolutely.
Let me ask you a couple of quick questions about immigration, because I haven't had a chance to call you while that was on your front burner.
Sure. And it still is, to the extent that I'm trying to create this awareness that we're being had again.
Well, the problem I'm having is I don't agree with the conservatives, but I'm also not really on the same wavelength with what I'm hearing mostly from liberals. I mean, just defend immigration at all costs. And one point that I haven't heard people talk about as much, how is it going to help the progressives to have millions of socially conservative Roman Catholics in the country as voters? We already see that poor white people in America can be convinced with the abortion argument or the gays in the schools argument to vote against their economic interests. So why do we assume that any other group is going to who can be convinced by the same arguments isn't going to be?
Well, I don't. Some of it, I wonder, Richard, if we've bought into a right wing meme about the idea of these socially conservative Catholic immigrants.
Okay.
I don't necessarily know that is true. What we're talking about with the undocumented immigrants in the first place is more of a, it's more of a workers' issue. And I think that the more we if we can get out and for instance the organization that sponsors the network and this program, the Carpenters and Millwrights, they are making a concerted effort to get out and organize in the Spanish speaking community. And if you do that, then it's obviously a it's obviously a boon to the progressive movement because you've got more people paying attention to workers' issues.
Well, if they can do that, that's one thing. But my concern is that it's going to end up being like Mate One and the coal mining strikes and the Molly Maguires, where these immigrants are going to be used the way that the Irish immigrants and the free blacks were, and at that time as strike breakers against organized labor.
Well, they already are. You know, that's why there's so much hogwash in what Bush says about you know doing jobs that Americans won't do, because you know Americans will hang drywall, Americans will finish concrete, Americans will paint, Americans will do electrical work, plumbing, all of those construction trades issues. But it's the fact that industry, and you know Walmart is notorious for this among others, what they're doing is they're trying to drive down union labor wages by using these immigrants in precisely the manner that you just described. It's not coming to it. It's already here. And so it becomes critical that they be organized.
And another thing I've never heard is, you know, back in the election, right after the election, you heard some people say, well, I'm just going to move to Canada. And everybody said, oh, no, you have to stay and fight. You can't just bail out and move to Canada. But you don't really hear people saying the same thing about Mexico. I mean, what is the status of the Mexican labor movement? Why is it their option just to pack up and leave instead of staying and fighting for the same rights there that we fought for 100 years ago here?
Because in large part there's nothing left there to fight for. The oligarchs have Mexico by the throat. I read a statistic not too long back, Richard, that said, the entirety of the Mexican governmental system is controlled by 5% of the population. And
yeah,
you know, when any particular group rises up, they are immediately brutally quashed. I forget the native group in southern Mexico that rose up and became a movement, and they've been shot and slaughtered and killed and butchered, and it happens every time.
Yeah. All right, that's a valid point. I guess,
for my part, if I could, a lot of us are packing. A lot of us talk about packing up and moving to Canada because we're language snobs and we don't have time to learn Spanish.
Yeah.
I mean, when you consider how much further a dollar goes south of the border, if you could go down there and buy land, and my God, there is exquisite land to be had down there. Costa Rica, for instance, a separate country, I know. But it would be smart.
Yeah, I used to live in Arizona. I knew guys who would go down to Mexico for the weekend, and they could spend a couple hundred bucks and live like kings.
Exactly. Richard, thank you so much for your very insightful questions. I hope I've been a little bit of help.
You have. I'll call you back with the other stuff.
Okay, take care.
Bye.
Bye now. And a quick break, and it's time. Hey, it's time to check in with our buddy Joe Vecchio, the Cup of Joe report for this Monday night, the 10th day of April, 2006. He was awesome Saturday night. You got to check him out next week. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. An old nemesis of mine commenting on the blog made it a point to say that while he wishes me great success in the future, he looks forward to the continued failure of my political ideas. This confuses me because I don't happen to see anything wrong with my political ideas. I believe, for example, in free and fair elections because I believe that we have the right and the duty to govern ourselves, and elections are the process by which we achieve that. I believe our society needs a balance of power between government and private enterprise, and a free press that isn't afraid to challenge either one. These are all things that, in principle, most people would agree with regardless of party affiliation. But I think there is a fundamental misunderstanding about what kind of world we all want to live in that is intentionally perpetrated by people whose only interest is their own ambitions. It's the assorted warmongers and power brokers of the world that get us to fight among ourselves for their benefit. If we were to be honest with ourselves and stop assuming that our so-called leaders had our best interest in mind, we would find that we have far more in common with each other than we have been led to believe. Unfortunately, fear is a powerful weapon, and too many of us are perfectly willing to be manipulated. When we give in to our fears, we give up our rights, our freedoms, our money, and the better part of our humanity. Maybe one day soon we'll realize that, as Roosevelt said, we have nothing to fear but fear itself. Now get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show via streaming audio every Saturday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Head On Radio Network.
Hello, can I ask a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Oh, it's gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
Oh, it's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Yes,
hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
A liberal light in the conservative darkness. Here's Bob Kincaid.
Hey, welcome back. We're halfway done with this Monday night edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. 23 minutes and change before the hour. And, you know, the phone number, 877, the number 4, Head On, 877-443-2366. And email to Bob at headonradio.com. Of course, well, it's easy to use. You know that. I should be telling somebody it's easy. Our pal Hubert writes in, the GOP and Congress won't do their jobs. They have the jobs, but they don't want to do them. Talking about jobs Americans won't do. Oh, but Lord, ain't it the truth? And our friend David from South Carolina. We have several Davids now, so I have to keep them straight. David from South Carolina writes in and notes with regard to the whole nuclear deal. He says, I'd say it's evident that Karl Rove has all of this planned. They'll do something to back the Dems into some corner after they engineer some reason to attack Iran. These scum trade lives for votes. Watch the Democrats try and act tough. Sad, but true. It's... Well, I mean, we saw it the last time. Well, you know, I disagree with the war, but once the war is started, I have to support my president.
Ooh, hogwash!
That's just a big old phony, creepy, dirty lie. Trent Lott wasn't supporting his president when Bill Clinton ordered the ugly little strikes on Kosovo. No, he wasn't. Let's go to the phones. Rick is with us from Panama City, Florida. Hey, Rick, you're Head On.
Hey, Bob, it's so good to hear you on the air.
Well, thank you. I was scared to death last Friday night.
I know. It was terrible, but at least it gave you an Agnes a full weekend off. And
huh?
It isn't like you didn't need it.
Weekend off?
Well, yeah, you were doing the news for the Bird Show.
Well, no, I mean, no, we produce all of that. We sit here and we work.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, okay, now I know who to blame.
Okay, that's fine. Sure.
No.
But no, there ain't no weekends off.
No, other than some read errors, you were very good. The show went off without a hitch. It was very good. I've been paying a lot of attention to it. I hadn't been paying enough attention to Bruce Burch's show, so I decided to.
I think we're growing. Fun. We're growing by leaps and bounds, Rick.
Yeah, I can't. I mean, what's up with Guy? We've got it. I mean, he's part of the network, but he's not. Is that what it is?
We're ironing out some hinks and kinks.
Okay, because I mean, Guy James. I mean, this guy. I mean, if I hit the lottery, man, I'm playing it, and there's $52 million at stake. You wouldn't. I'm buying
Powerball. Powerball's up to 220, and that's my retirement plan, dude.
They don't have it in my state.
No Powerball in Florida.
No Powerball, no. Jeb won't allow it. This son of a.
Yeah, I understand.
You know, he just won't allow it. But seriously, I'll buy a flamethrower, and then you know, we'll put all you guys in a lineup, man. And it'll be kicking. We'll start a network, the end all network.
Sounds like fun, man.
Yeah, it's a daydream, but man, if it comes true, I swear to you, as everybody here on the chat room and on everybody on the air listening, I will buy that flamethrower, and we will have a network, believe me. Anyway, the thing that's gone under the radar is Karl Rove. Did anybody watch Karl Rove on C-SPAN the past week?
You mean where he went to address the Republican Lawyers Group?
Yes, the particular group that are doing all they can to help fix the voting problems.
Yeah, I did see that.
Did you?
Yeah, I watched it. I watched it live here while I was preparing for the show.
Well, so did I.
And it was weird. Just so people can know what you're referring to. He got Karl Rove stood up and complained about black box voting.
Yeah, he did.
It was weird. And of course,
the first thing he interjected, of course, was this whole problem that all the good docs, and he had baby docs and papa docs, and at some point in time I didn't know if he was talking about Haiti or what. You know, he lost me, or maybe it was Brer Rabbit. But I mean the guy was he went into this whole liturgy of all these things wrong with the fact that that people that get harmed by creepy doctors who don't know jack in hospitals can sue. And he's trying to start that whole cap thing, which will be modeled after California, where even if they sell, sew your foot to your face, you only get $200,000. So that's what it started out as. And then he morphed into this whole thing because that's what he was there for. This group of people that want to save the voting, want to save the electric from itself, and all the problems with black box voting and other things. And how he's going to get on it, and then there was the Q&A, and it was like, it was down through through the mirror thing, you know, like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
down the rabbit hole through the looking glass.
Yeah, it was, you know, and I was sitting there, like, my head was hurting, and I was thinking, like, did I get this wrong? Did I miss something? I knew I didn't, but it was just that clammy presence from this son of a bitch.
The thing is, what they're recognizing is that they're behind the curve on this issue. They understand that the American people does now, they don't believe, they know. The facts and evidence have been presented to the American people, Rick, and they know that they are being had. They're being dealt a game of three-card Monte every time they go into one of these sleazy little Diebold or ES&S or Sequoia system booths.
Oh,
and as
yeah.
a consequence of that, the Republicans have to get on board with it. Because otherwise, hell's going to pop wide open when America realizes that it was Republicans that shoved this down our throats.
Yeah, but isn't it just amazing to watch it? It's like watching sausage being made or government, you know, like a bill being created, you know, on the Senate floor or the House.
Oh, and now we add the chicken lips. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I mean, it really was some rough stuff to watch. I mean, you're talking about people that are so... incarnate evil that we're co-opting, trying desperately to co-opt this issue and make it their own. And I just knew that the kind of people that call up on C-SPAN in the morning, because I watch it every single morning, and the Talking Points weirdos, these Hannonites and all these other creepy sons of guns, they were just licking it up. Yeah, we're going to save America. We're going to fix the voting machine. I mean, but yet, in fact, it is the very people, Karl Rove and the people in that room, that caused these problems, that created these vicious machines, that went down and banged on the glass, as you know, during the recount and said, oh, America and all this stuff, and then later went on to become part of the Supreme Court or something. But anyway, you know, it was just so bizarre to watch that, and it didn't get any press, no press.
Oh, no, none at all.
And it is so weird. And then 2 to 3 days later, down here in Bay County, Florida, they all of a sudden rolled out something that I didn't even know was taking place right under my nose. They replaced all of our perfectly fantastic optical voting machines. These were things with a paper trail and a receipt, and they were scanned optically. We never had a problem in the world. They replaced all those with touch screens.
Oh, God.
Yep. And I had no idea we had a problem. No one ever said we had a problem here in Bay County. We were, and in fact, at one time they were saying that we should be the nationwide model about 4 years ago.
Yeah.
But they got rid of all that, and now we're going to have touch screen.
Well, our buddy David in South Carolina just checked in real quick, Rick, to say, just remember they speak in opposites, so that's true. When Karl Rove says he wants to fix the black box voting, that means, of course, he wants more black boxes. Well, just like clear skies means more crap in the air,
yeah,
and healthy forests means less trees in the ground.
Yeah, I mean, it's just amazing. But I just, the unmitigated gall to be able to try to co-opt this issue. And I don't think, you know, I don't think it's going to play, but when you have these hard right districts like I'm in, these types of, I mean, Bay County is just...
Oh, my God, wasn't Joe Scarborough your congressman once upon a time?
Pretty close, yeah. He's in Pensacola.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he was in Pensacola, but
that's where they found Lori Klausutis dead.
Within 110 miles of VD, yes. Yeah, I mean Scarborough.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, it was that close. Okay, another thing, and now I wanted to bring up something too, and I was trying to make this point about a year or two ago, is they brought up this is when I had my blog, AlasBabylon.com, and I posted there prominently that if we were to have another terrorist attack here in the United States, Cheney said we would attack with nuclear missiles Iran. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Okay. That didn't sell. It didn't fly. They got their heads buffeted by that, and they went back down, like they always do, and waited for the moment that they thought was right. Now, here we come again with, after all the propaganda or the specified leaks for the public good to certain people that are friends of the administration for the good of us all, that they here they are again suggesting nuclear war on Iran. It's not new. They've been saying this right along.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're right. I remember a couple of years ago when somebody said something to dear leader about it. He said, well, we never take any option off the table.
Well, I know I've got a archive of the when I posted on this article, and I'll try to trace it back. If not, I'll just send you a copy of the HTML page and just show you exactly what I'm talking about. It's somewhere in the neighborhood of 13 to 21 months ago, but Cheney actually made the statement. If there's one, and here's the best part of the article. The Iranians did not have to be involved in the terror attack. It was just simply at this. If we were attacked by anybody, then we would nuclear missile attack Iran. That's exactly what the article said. And it was so wild and so crazy, and everybody went nuts that they had to fold and go back underground for a while. But now here they are bringing it again. So it makes you wonder, you know, why is it so necessary to have this nuclear war? And from everything I've been hearing from everybody that's a lot smarter than me, there's a bunch of thoughts that say, well, A, these Dominionists want to try to rush Jesus back, thinking they could force his hand.
Well, like I said, June 6th, 2006.
Right.
666.
Yep. I mean, they're, you know how they are about that kind of stuff. I mean,
well, that's, you know, that's one of the things. I'm absolutely not going to allow this show to get turned into 9/11 night. But the very idea of September 11th, I don't credit the tourists with being creative enough to come up with something as ironically delicious as 9/11. You know, the national U.S. distress call.
That's right. And but if you want to go a little crazier,
but then the same thing went down in Spain.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a numeric significance, and by that I'm not talking about any cabalistic foolishness.
No, I know what you're talking about.
But there was numeric significance to the London subway bombing.
That's right, but there's also numeric significance, and now I'm going to do exactly what you said you wouldn't do. The big massacre that took place with Brigham Young and everybody out in Utah, where they slaughtered that whole wagon train full of people,
mm-hmm.
that took place on September 11th.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, who knows? Because these people are crazy. I mean, is it Alex Jones' New World Order, or is it just a bunch of psychotic dominionists who want to keep trying every century to try to bring Christ back to some kind of weird belief that somehow they're going to be saved? I mean, as far as I remember, I read Dante's Inferno twice. And from what I understand is guys like the Bushes, other guys upside down in the burning manure. You know, I don't understand why they think they're somehow, you know, have this line to God. I mean, it almost brings back, if I want to get a little bit more wacky, the Raiders of the Lost Ark and what happened to the Nazis when they tried to steal the megaphone to God. You know, I don't understand why they think the things that they do.
You're having semantic issues already,
yeah.
Rick.
Oh, I know.
Think. You use the word think. They don't think. They believe. And believe is, you know, it goes back to, it was Saturday night on Fourth Estate when they were playing sound clips. Let me see if I can find this thing real quick. I think I may still have it.
Well, if it's the one that I'm thinking of, I can almost quote it.
This is from last week's appearance with regard to, where Alberto Gonzalez showed up in the House of Representatives and started talking about the Fourth Amendment. Let me see if this is it.
I want to follow along with the questioning that Adam Schiff started with regard to the warrantless wiretaps, the NSA program. I just want to understand your answer. I wasn't here when he questioned, but I was briefed by him. You mentioned that you would not rule out wiretapping solely domestic calls, domestic to domestic calls,
no,
under the inherent authority that the president received under the war resolution that we passed here. Is that correct?
I can't rule it out.
Can we be confident that there are no ongoing programs or no programs that have been started and stopped that have used solely domestic to domestic, that have conducted surveillance on domestic to domestic communications?
Congressman, I can't comment on anything beyond what the president has said, although I will say that in terms of what the activities of the program have been and are, have been briefed to certain members of Congress.
So, okay, that's not it. Now, that's equally interesting because...
No, but I have two really great quotes.
No, well, just wait real quick, okay? This is the one, because it's that hateful word again, and you're going to hear it here. I despise the word believe, Rick. I've done everything in my power to excise it from my vocabulary because it is the single most useless, god-awful word in the English language, and I include all the dirty ones, too.
I understand you to say that reasonable cause to believe and probable cause... were essentially the same thing?
From the way that this program has been operated, yes. That it is a probable cause standard that's being applied with respect to the terrorist surveillance program, consistent with the jurisprudence relating to probable cause in a normal criminal law context.
Now, that sounds like mumbo-jumbo to the average American, I'm thinking, Rick.
It does, because these guys, they talk out of both sides of their mouth.
No, they just lie. I mean, that thing is so freighted. That guy, dig it for just a minute. The Fourth Amendment says that the right of the people to be secure in their persons, papers, and effects shall be inviolable. It says, and no warrant shall issue except upon probable cause. Uh-huh. Okay? Those are like bright freaking lines. I mean, the neon lights. Yeah, probable cause, probable cause, probable cause. And probable cause, mathematically, within legal mumbo-jumbo jargon, is like 50% plus 0.00001. It's a concept of more likely than not. All right? But it is based upon knowledge. It's based upon facts. It's based upon evidence.
Okay.
Now all right? Now, what he did, Rick, is he said that reasonable cause to believe is the same thing as probable cause, which is just stupidly, it's ignorant beyond belief.
Well,
and it wasn't on any networks or anything. Reasonable cause to believe, you know, there's that hateful word. Boom, believe. Okay, I got a reasonable cause to believe that you're Santa Claus.
I know, but you see, you don't understand how these guys work. They've already paved the path. They paved the path, and you just missed it. Now, first off, let me interject a little bit of history. That's exactly what the Gestapo nickel-plated warrant was. The nickel-plated warrant that every Gestapo cop or soldier, whatever you want to call him, carried in his pocket was a blanket warrant. He held it up, and then that was his probable cause. He had the right to do anything to you, German, Jew, or whomever, that he wanted to. Okay? And it was based on that very same principle. It was blanket probable cause justified by suspicion, accusation, or thought of the officer holding the nickel-plated warrant. Okay? That's exactly what Gonzalez is talking about. It's nothing new. Okay, item number two. They made a point of telling us that this statement, they said, and I'll do my best to quote it, but I might paraphrase it, and it was this. You come from a fact-based reality.
Oh, I remember this.
We, on the other hand, create reality. They taught the American people that. And then there was this other little thing that occurred before that and even Gonzalez that didn't make any sense. But it piqued my curiosity, and to this day I can't get anything nailed down on it. And it was an interview that was happening with Poppy Bush. And he said, if the American people knew what we have done, they'd drag us through the streets and lynch us. He said that. And I'm still trying.
Oh, I remember that. I've read that. Yeah,
yeah,
I remember seeing that.
I'm still trying to find out what he was referring to, because when a reporter quizzed him on it, it's as if he had a little mind fart. And when the reporter quizzed him on that, he said, oh, never mind. What were you asking?
Yeah, next.
Yeah. And so this is the kind of mentality that we're dealing with. And the fact that they say these things, they lay the groundwork. You've said it before, I've said it before, and many others before us and after us will say it as well, is that these guys play this chessboard so far out, it is mind-boggling. And if anybody thinks that this group of creeps, like Bush and everybody else, is a bunch of bumbling, stumbling morons, you're wrong.
No, Bush is a hateful little sociopath. Yeah. He is a bumbling, stumbling moron as well.
A frat boy punk that's in the right place at the right time.
But he is surrounded by a bunch of truly evil. I mean, we're not talking about the Boris and Natasha screw up type evil.
No,
we're talking about, you know, like I said, the really high class James. No, they're street punks. I'm sorry, they're street punks.
Well. Just remember, Bush is in it to win it. He is, despite all of his flaws, he's the perfect man for the job right now for what they want him to do.
Oh, sure he is, because he's pliable and manipulable.
And he is just as vain and sociopathic, as you said, and psychotic as they come. And this is the same kind of mentality and psychological profile that has been ascribed to Caligula,
mm-hmm.
and the man himself who burned down Rome. If you go on the net, you can
Nero.
Find. Yeah, that's right. You can find.
Actually, Nero was brilliant.
He was brilliant, but he lost his marbles when he started lighting up Christians as.
No, he didn't lose his marbles at all. I mean, you're. The fact of the matter is Rome was a city made of wooden structures, and there was a good reason for burning it.
Yeah, I know. I remember he wanted a new palace.
And the Christians presented an easy target because they made such intolerable asses of themselves in the way they behaved.
But what I was referring to was overreaching, and that is what is happening with the neocons. And that is why we all better hunt a hole, because there's no way on God's green earth that they're going to allow an election to take place unless our police, our FBI, our CIA, and or military arrest this crowd and take them out with raincoats over their heads and handcuffs on.
Well said, Rick, but we got to get out of here, brother.
All right, bye.
Later.
See ya.
News is next. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. James Dean, Holly, Andy, Jackie, Little Joe, James Dean. Holly came from Miami, FLA, hitchhiked her way across USA, plucked her eyebrows on the way, shaved her legs, and then he was a she. She says, hey babe, 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 hey babe. Take a walk on the wild side.
Head On Radio Network News, I'm John Fox. Critics of the Bush administration in the U.S. expressed alarm about reports that George Bush is mulling military options to knock out Iran's nuclear program. Retired General Anthony Zinni, the former head of U.S. Central Command, told U.S. television he had no detailed knowledge of the alleged military plans, but a preemptive strike against Iran's nuclear program would be extremely risky. Any military plan involving Iran is going to be very difficult. We should not fool ourselves to think it would just be a strike and then it will be over, Zinni said. General Zinni went on to say, the Iranians will retaliate. They have many possibilities in an area where there are many vulnerabilities. From our troop positions to the oil and gas in the region that have been interrupted, to attacks on Israel, to the conduct of terrorism. Tens of thousands of protesters turned out Monday in small towns and big cities across the United States demanding that undocumented immigrants get a chance to live the American dream. On what is dubbed a National Day of Action for Immigration Justice, demonstrators shook up the streets from Atlanta, Georgia to South Bend, Indiana. In Lexington, Kentucky, they waved signs that read, "We were all immigrants once, and we are not terrorists," the Associated Press has reported. Hundreds of Hurricane Katrina evacuees from as far as Texas and Georgia have signed up to board buses to return to Louisiana to vote in the future of New Orleans. The evacuees are returning to cast early votes Monday in elections for mayor and city council, the first major test of the city's post-Katrina electoral system. The busing is now practical and symbolic, said Kevin Whelan, spokesman for the Association of Community Organizations for Reform Now, or ACORN. Part of it is obviously turning out real voters, but it's still obviously a small percentage of the entire electorate, he said. Displaced residents can vote Monday through Thursday or Saturday at early voting stations in Lake Charles, Shreveport, New Orleans, and seven other cities around the state. The offices will be closed for Good Friday. California water officials took advantage of a weekend lull in the stormy weather to patch weak spots in the state's levee system as more rain loomed ahead. After the rainiest March on record, many reservoirs in California's Central Valley are groaning at full capacity and 10 more days of rain are forecast. Rodney Meyer, acting chief of the California Division of Flood Management, said, quote, "We saw in New Orleans the storm was coming in. It was known days ahead, and we're not sure they took all the steps they could have." This is news on the horn.
The major record labels say that downloading music from the internet is stealing, stealing, stealing. But according to these people, making a mixtape for your friend is stealing too. So is making a tape of a radio show.
Clone Radio. We play the songs that sound more like everyone else than anyone else.
When a rock band plays an AC/DC cover at a bar that doesn't pay ASCAP.
That's stealing. Or have you ever sung Happy Birthday to your friend at a restaurant?
Warning!
Happy Birthday is copyrighted, so if you're singing in a public place, you'd better be paying royalties, or you'll be stealing music. Does all this stuff about stealing music sound absurd? Would you rather have a world where our music culture wasn't the intellectual property of five corporations? Then stop giving them your money, and make sure your friends and family don't either. Better yet, try burning them a CD. If we pull the plug on major labels, music gets better. Find out more about what you can do. Check out downhillbattle.org.
Sydney Morning Herald reports that the coal inquiry into the Australian Wheat Board payoff scandal to the Saddam regime has heated up. John Howard is likely to appear as a witness on Thursday following Mr. Vail, who testified for 85 minutes, often replying, quote, "I can't recall," unquote, or, quote, "I don't have an answer," unquote, when asked why he failed to act on or was not told about numerous warnings that the wheat exporter was paying kickbacks to Saddam Hussein. Counsel assisting the inquiry, John Agus, pressed Mr. Vail, the trade minister, over why he asked Australia's embassy in Washington to lobby the then U.S. Secretary of State, Colin Powell, relying on AWB's denials without conducting an independent inquiry into the allegations. Mr. Agus asked, quote, "You were vouching the word and the good name of Australia. Is that correct?" unquote. Mr. Vail replied, saying he relied on his department's advice. Indicted fraudster Tom DeLay may have put off his resignation for the money. John Ferry, a former aide to DeLay, said, quote, "He needed to raise money for the defense fund. That was the bottom line," unquote. John Amato today from Crooks and Liars adds, quote, "In other words, DeLay was raising money from suckers, supporters, under false pretenses. He asked contributors for financial support, telling them that he needed the money to help with his campaign, when in reality, DeLay knew he'd have to resign and he wanted the donations for his legal defense. DeLay's con is legal, but obviously dishonest," unquote. The Sydney Morning Herald reports today, the U.S. is conducting a propaganda campaign to magnify the role of the leader of Al-Qaeda in Iraq, according to internal military documents and officers familiar with the program. The effort has raised his profile in a way that some military intelligence officers believe may have overstated his importance and helped the Bush administration tie the war to organizations responsible for the September 11 terrorist attacks. This is the news on the Head On Radio Network. From Sydney, I'm John Fox.
Shaved her legs and then he was a she. She says, "Hey babe, hey 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 babe."
He's a man who just loves conservatives, baked, broiled, or fried. Here's Bob Kincaid.
Hour number three. Everybody danced. Except Bob. Bob can't dance. I'm like the guy in Best in Show. I really do have two left feet. It's hell buying shoes. Everybody else danced. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. We did that because, Agnes did. I had nothing to do with it. Agnes played the Hour 3 intro in Hour 2, and so we needed something fresh for Hour 3.
My bad.
That's fun. It's fun. It's about 7.5 minutes past the hour. But speaking of taking a walk on the wild side, I don't know. I need somebody to recut that to walk on the weird side just for stories like this. Dateline, Madison, Wisconsin. Religious groups claim in a... Oh, God. Should have saved this for Wednesday, but, you know. Religious groups claim in a lawsuit against the state of Wisconsin that they are being wrongly excluded, you know, persecuted, from a program that allows state employees to make payroll deductions to charities. Yes, Lord, yes. It's an Associated Press story. The lawsuit challenges rules that require the charities receiving donations to pledge not to discriminate on the basis of religion or sexual orientation in hiring staff and accepting members. So, therefore, the Association of Faith-Based Organizations claims in the lawsuit filed in Dane County the rule discriminates against groups that require employees, board members, and volunteers to share their religious beliefs. Some of them believe homosexuality is a sin. Steve Aiden, he's a lawyer for the Virginia group. They're based in Virginia. And he says that the Wisconsin lawsuit is the first of many that they're going to file. And he said, it's unfair. You know, he practically broke down in tears, little Steve Aiden did, because, well, the rules allow environmental groups receiving donations to require that their leaders be environmentalists, but if you're a religious group, you cannot require your employees and your volunteers to share your faith. It cuts against religious groups directly. Crybaby. That's what you get with the religion industry. Bunch of daggum crybabies. That's what they are. We're being persecuted. We're only 80% of the American population. Only 80% of the American population thinks that everything went to hell in a handbasket when some cave woman named Eve had a conversation with a gossipy water moccasin. Ooh, we're persecuted. Yeah. The lawsuit claims the Christian Legal Society was excluded from the program last year after refusing to adopt a statement promising not to discriminate on the basis of religion. Holy Moses. So, let's see. They win this lawsuit. I guess the Klan gets to sign up on the charity list next, right? Because that's what we need. The Klan. Well, then again, with these religion industry freaks... that pretty much is the Klan. The lawsuit wants it declared unconstitutional, this rule about not being able to discriminate against people because of what they do when the lights go out or how they, and there's that hateful word, believe. Jesus criminy. The lawsuit names state employees on a committee that determines eligibility for the program and Department of Administration Secretary Stephanie Bablich, who makes the final decisions. This is just, what's the name of this group? The Association of Faith-Based Organizations. They've got so much money. They've got so much money they can run around filing these dumbass lawsuits because there are no hungry people left in America. There are no homeless people left in America. Everyone's getting a proper wage. All the old people have good pensions. And America is just such a happy, happy place that the Association of Faith-Based Organizations has nothing better to do with its money than run around filing lawsuits saying, please, please, it won't be any fun for us. We, daggummit, we have to have somebody to hate. This is disgusting. I wish someone in the Wisconsin state government would file a motion for sanctions against these bastards. And get a judge to go along with it and, sanction them to the tune of, 2-3 million, 10 million, whatever money they've got. Take it all away from them. So they can't do this anymore. Promoting discrimination. Oh, God, I hate them. Let's go to the phones. Wayne is with us. Hey, Wayne, you're head on.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
No, I'm okay.
What's going on, man? It's an exciting show. It's a good show.
Thank you.
And, listen, I got a question.
Okay.
For everyone.
All right.
Not to be answered.
Rhetorical.
Just think about it.
Yeah.
If you were Jesus Christ, would you come back here? I mean, the dude wouldn't be accepted, man. I'm sorry.
Well, he was so according to this newly translated book that should have been in the Bible, he was so disgusted with it the first time around that he got Judas to betray him so that he could get on out.
Right. And I don't blame him. Hey, rat me out, man. I got to get out of here. Which shows he was a very sensible man. Also a liberal and a carpenter.
Yes.
And if we had a union, I'm sure he would have belonged to it at that time.
Well, yeah, that's the that's Nazareth Local 00001.
I think you got to add a few more zeros, but, you know. You know, we could argue about that later, you know. To all my good friends out there and people have helped me, John Fox, and I finally got on the message board.
Chat room. Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, I don't know. I guess I was signed up for the blog, but that wasn't chat room. And but anyway.
Yeah, you needed the secret handshake and high sign.
Something like that, you know. And so finally, you know, I have access to the thing. And tonight I signed on and, you know.
Why, there you are. I see your name there now.
Well, and, you know, right away, you know, it comes up, hey, you know, wow, is that Union Man Wayne? Which, wow, that's a very proud thing. I like that, you know.
Yeah.
That's very good. But I have to explain to everybody, you know, when it comes to computer technology and typing and things, I mean, by the time I try to get in a response, the whole page went by. You know, so, you know, when it comes to computer technology and typing and stuff, I'm a whole bunch of steps lower than incompetent. So I hope everybody understands that.
Well, but you stick with it, Wayne. You'll be typing like it's 1975 in the Saigon Bureau of the AP before you know it.
I'd really like to believe that, Bob.
I mean, you'll be flying along so, and slapping know, that space bar with your thumb, and you're, oh God, you know, there'll be smoke coming off of the keyboard.
For right now, I want everybody to you know, accept my apology that I don't respond. You know, but I love to read what they have to say. You know, between listening and watching, you know, my mind is all used up, pal. Listen, I want to put another thought out there. The immigration thing.
Yeah.
You know, which is perplexing, to say the least.
Sure.
A lot of this is a direct result of free trade agreements.
That and
especially NAFTA.
Yeah, free trade agreements and right-to-work laws.
There you go. You know, according to, you know, I don't know if the Washington Post, Times, New York Times, somebody, or there are like 19 million more people living in poverty in Mexico than there were before NAFTA. You know, because NAFTA never did what it was supposed to do.
Right. NAFTA drove people north.
Pardon me?
NAFTA drove people north.
Sure it did. You know, I mean, well, it you know, I mean, it was supposed to be a wonderful thing. It was supposed to raise all boats.
Yeah, because all of a sudden Mexicans were going to be able to buy Cadillacs and
exactly.
Frigidaires
you know,
and stuff.
But none of that ever happened, you know. And, you know, it was all a big ruse and, well, it was a game, you know.
Wrestling.
Pardon me?
Wrestling.
Yes. You know, corporate America has made out very well. The American working people, their wages have gone down. The Mexican working people, their wages have gone down even further. And that's why they're trying to come here. You know, it's just that simple. If NAFTA would have worked the way it was supposed to be, we wouldn't have the problems that we are facing today. Because people could be able to stay in their own countries and make a decent living. And that's what it was supposed to do, and it never did that.
And for, you know, and for anybody out there with us contemplating the election cycle this year, if you have a congressperson in your district who voted, for instance, this last time through, voted for the Central American Free Trade Agreement that passed by one vote.
Yeah.
Get that alone is enough to say, get him the hell out of the house. You got no business being here. You're anti-American. You hate my country. Go on home.
Yes, it is. And people should find out who voted for that.
I mean, for instance, Arch Moore in a bad wig, Shelley Moore.
She voted for that.
Yes, she did. She needs to go home.
Yes. Yes, she does. And I'm going to work very hard. I don't know who the nominee is going to be in the Republican or in the Democratic Party. You know, I know, well, I don't, she doesn't have any opposition anyway, does she? Shelley Moore?
I don't think so, no.
No, you know. But whoever the nominee is in the Democratic Party, I'm going to work for fiercely because we need that house back. And I think we can get it, you know. I have my, I'd rather see win the Democratic primary, but whomever that may be, then I'm going to work for them. You know, the second district is, well, it's not in my area.
No, but it,
but
and it
that
goes
doesn't
from,
mean I can't work for them.
And for those who are familiar with the map of West Virginia, the second congressional district is just psychotic. You talk about your gerrymandering. It goes from Charleston to Martinsburg. And there's no way to get from one place to, from one point to the
well,
other.
Well, and it goes around corners and skips places and...
Yeah.
We'll follow this highway for 10 miles because we don't want any of these people. And then we'll, you know, we'll pick them up here, you know. I mean, you would swear to God Tom DeLay worked here. Well, which he did. I mean, you know, who got more money than anybody...
Except for one other.
DeLay.
Yeah, except for one other person. Yeah, Shelley.
Shelley Moore Capito, yeah. So. What did you call her?
Archmore in a bad wig.
Yeah. He was a crook, you know, Archmore.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Big crook.
Yeah.
A shakedown artist from the coal industry.
Yeah, oh, yeah, he did. You know what, he reduced workers' comp by, like, 12%.
Oh, yeah, and, took payoffs after the Buffalo Creek disaster.
Yeah, yeah, he was, well, and his daughter is following in their, you know, in his footsteps. And, you know, everyone, you know, the West Virginia people should also remember that Shelley Moore was the deciding vote in the budget recognition.
Reconciliation, yeah.
Yeah, bill, you know, which cut Medicare, Medicaid, student loans, child support, you know. Everything good for working people was cut, and that was done solely by Shelley Moore Capito. So,
yeah.
You know, we're going to try to get even. I don't know what else to say.
Well, and you know,
try to get rid of her.
I hope the primary race between Richie Robb and Mike Callahan is nice and clean, with and I haven't seen anything to really indicate that it isn't. Because those are either one of those guys would be an excellent member of Congress.
Well, I hope
whoever loses that race has the common dignity to throw his weight in behind the guy who won it and bust his ass to get rid of Shelley Moore.
Well, and that should, you know, it's a little bit too late right now, but that should be a requirement of a Democrat.
Yeah.
You know, you will support whoever wins. And,
right.
Because the most important thing is to win back that House. And one of the ways, we can, you know, we only have one way of doing that in West Virginia, and that is to defeat Shelley Moore and put a Democrat back in there. You know, we have the other two congressional seats, so
right. Well,
we need this one also.
And the national, I've been getting these emails from the National Republican Campaign Committee. They're all hot and heavy on Alan Mollahan these days.
Oh yeah, they are. Well, and, you know,
classic Republican tactic. We're so dirty we can't stand to look at ourselves in a mirror, so therefore we're going to sling mud at someone else.
Exactly.
Hoping that you won't look at us.
Exactly. So. But listen, don't you feel a lot better now that George Bush said that, you know, bombing Iran is just, what did he call it? Wild speculation?
Yeah, wild speculation.
Is that what he said? Wild?
I think so.
Something like that, you know.
Speculation. Yeah, it sounds like something from Spring Break. Yeah, speculation gone wild.
Right. You know. I mean, you know, that gives you a lot of confidence. I mean, this is the same guy that reminded us that you need a warrant to wiretap anybody.
Well, not just that. You know, I've got this. I mean, you know, check it out. I've been playing it a couple of times, Wayne.
You said we're headed to war in Iraq. I don't know why you say that. I hope we're not headed to war in Iraq. I'm the person who gets to decide, not you.
That was December 31st, 2002.
Right.
I hope we're not headed to war in Iraq.
Well,
you know.
Go. You know, I don't know. Somebody wrote something, and it started out, IR, you put in the rest of the letters, whichever ones you choose.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. IRA. Yeah, they just had a bum consonant at the end of it. They didn't mean to start a war in Iraq. They wanted to do Iran.
Right. You know, so now we're moving over to where we really wanted to be in the beginning.
Yeah, right.
But,
yeah.
I don't know. Frightening people.
Oh,
these are frightening times.
Oh, I tell you what, though. I've got another clip, Wayne, from Dear Leader today. And this one, it has to be heard to be believed. This was also from his appearance in Baltimore today at the Johns Hopkins School of International Studies. This is a girl, a young lady, a student there, getting up and asking him a question. And it's one of those things, you know, this guy really is. He's got his thumb on the nuclear football, goes wherever he goes. You know, he goes to the bathroom, some dude with the nuclear football is standing outside the door. And just in case he needs to start a nuclear war after he gets done washing his hands. And this is a question that was put to him. You know, the private contractors, the mercenaries in Iraq?
Yeah.
It's a very trenchant question. Listen to how he handles it.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. President. It's an honor to have you here.
Thanks.
I'm a first-year student in South Asia Studies. My question is in regards to private military contractors. The Uniform Code of Military Justice does not apply to these contractors in Iraq. I asked your Secretary of Defense a couple months ago what law governs their actions. Mr. Rumsfeld,
I'm going to ask him. Go ahead.
It's just so
Help.
Funny.
Well,
Oh, God.
I was hoping your answer might be a little more specific. Mr. Rumsfeld answered that Iraq has its own domestic laws, which he assumed applied to those private military contractors. However, Iraq is clearly not currently capable of enforcing its laws, much less against, you know, over our American military contractors. I would submit to you that in this case, this is one case that privatization is not a solution.
Mm.
And Mr. President, how do you propose to bring private military contractors under a system of law?
Yeah, I appreciate that very much. I wasn't kidding. I was going to pick up the phone and say, Mr. Secretary, I got an interesting question.
He's slurring again.
This is what delegation, I don't mean to be dodging the question, although it's kind of convenient in this case, but never. I really will. I'm going to call the secretary and say, you brought up a very valid question, and what are we doing about it? That's how I work.
I'm stupid.
Thanks.
And drunk. Don't forget drunk.
Yeah,
I'm drunk.
Yeah.
I'm drunk. I'm drugged out of my mind, and I am dumber than a bag of rags.
But I have to drink because it's better than cocaine.
God.
Yeah.
God.
God.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's the responses of the crowd that make me a little bit crazy, Wayne. They're sitting there. I mean, I don't know. Do they know what these private mercenaries do? They cruise down the road and shoot people in their cars for the fun of it, just to watch them crash?
Right, and we're supposed to be extremely upset that, you know, that the Iraqis take these people, you know. What was the incident where, you know, I don't know, after they were dead, they burned them and hung them from, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sorry. You know, what did you do to deserve that? You know, when you mess with people like that, people get vindictive.
Yeah.
And you know,
they will
people
hate
will
you.
Take out their revenge equal or more than what you have objected them to.
Yeah.
Or subjected them to, I
right.
should say.
Right, exactly.
You know, and...
And this crowd's sitting there laughing. Ha, ha, contractors in Iraq, that sure is funny. He don't know the answer. Damn. You know.
You know, I mean, you know, you and your family are sitting in an undisclosed location in somewhere in Fayette County, and a bunch of people come in and kill your wife and children. You know, so what are you going to do?
Until
really made a mistake here. You know, my wife and children didn't deserve to die. You know, if you catch one of them, what are you going to do? You're going to do worse.
No.
Than they did to you.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm sorry. You know, call me a rotten American or whatever, but there's justification.
Yeah. I mean, it's been
I'm
documented.
Sorry.
The frontline video, several months old now. That showed these lawless thugs from Blackwater and I forget what some of the other names are, but you know there is no military rule over them. You know they were wandering the streets of New Orleans after Katrina.
Right, and aren't these the guys that make $1,000 a day opposed to some poor GI that
only if they're the really low rent ones.
Right, right. They're mercenaries, is what they are. And
yeah,
you know.
Well, and the thing is, the Blackwater chief guy, Wayne, came out last week and said that they're going to start offering their services as a private army to the highest bidder all around the world.
And we're going to employ those people.
Well, guess who's gonna be the guards?
Well, we already do.
Yeah, but guess who's gonna be the guards at the what are they called? Emergency alien detention centers that Halliburton is building as we speak.
Blackwater guy.
Sure.
Who's that? What's his name there? Who is Mayor Giuliani's buddy?
Oh, I can't remember him. Yeah.
We were gonna make him Homeland Security.
Yeah, the dude that was all mobbed up.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I don't know. Maybe he was a little bit better than the pedophiles we hired. I don't know. You know, who is that? Yeah. I don't know. There's
oh, God, Wayne. Better than the child molesters we hired. Oh, God. You know,
did we not?
Yeah, we did. I mean, yeah. You think you're okay? That's a bad story. I'm going to look away. I'm not going to look at that story. So you turn away from it, and the thing is, this one didn't get nearly as much play.
Bernie Kasich or something.
Brian Doyle. Oh, no.
No,
the guy with Giuliani.
Yeah, I
remember him. But the thing is, you know, there's another story. This guy got caught, and it really didn't get the play in the news that it deserved. The 14-year-old girl that he thought he was preying on, saying, "Oh, honey, you need to go get yourself a webcam so I can see you naked."
Right.
Of course, it was a Polk County, Florida sheriff's deputy sitting there typing away, you know. But the thing is, there's more to the story than was reported. Not only did he think she was a 14-year-old girl, Wayne, he thought she was a 14-year-old girl who was recovering from leukemia.
Wow.
I mean, just holy Moses.
That one.
You know,
God.
That's a whole brand new aisle in the great Sick Mart.
And listen,
I get off on 14-year-old girls who were almost dying of leukemia. I can't get there.
No, me neither, man. No way. Didn't I read somewhere where this guy also had a history of this?
Oh, yeah, he got
that
busted.
They never investigated or something?
He worked for Time Magazine and got busted for, you know, spending time, you know, looking at online porn at work.
So we can attribute this to, we don't have to look at his record. He was just a crony.
Why would you need to look at his record?
Yeah.
And then just a couple of days after this dude goes down, Wayne, another guy at Homeland Security got busted for exposing himself to a woman. You know, the trench coat. Hey, honey, looky. You know, that thing.
God. Well, that sure makes me feel a lot safer, Bob, I'll tell you.
Sleep tight tonight, America, Wayne, you know.
Oh, God. I hope we wake up in time, man.
Yeah, me too.
You know. Like I say, Jesus, if you don't come back, I don't blame you, buddy.
Yeah, they ain't going to hold it against you.
No, I'm not, you know.
One trip around is enough.
Yeah, exactly. And it was, you know, actually a lot better when he was here before. And
yeah.
It wasn't good then. But what are you going to do?
And all these people want to make him come back. Hey, no. Hey, Dad, don't make me
do it. Yeah, well, I mean, you know,
I went through this once. They're going to kill me again, Daddy.
But, I mean, you know, how's their, well, if we kill more people, it'll make them come back faster. So drop them nukes. You know, is that their philosophy? I don't understand.
Philosophy?
I'm very confused.
No kidding, you're not the only one.
No, they're very confused also, but.
No, they're just crazy, mean, evil, and stupid.
Boy, they are. And,
I mean, that's why, you know, I
don't believe in a future. Don't they worry about their...
Their future ends when Jesus comes back and he's golden El Dorado and sweeps them up and they get to go and, like, have cocktails with Jesus and then they come back and put the Jews to the sword. That's the way they believe.
Okay, well, isn't that part... No, that's not part of rapture, is it?
No, sure.
Well, I thought rapture happened before.
Well, it does. But they work it out where they get to come back and kill Jews too, because you know you just don't want to miss out on some good Jew killing when you're a right wing religion industry Republican.
Right, but until we get to where we kill them, we got to support everything they do. But you know, because they're going to help them come back.
Right, because they you know they're going to drag Jesus down from the clouds too. And see, this is what is so scary, because a lot of people don't realize that in Muslim apocalyptic thought, there's this character called the Mahdi.
Yeah.
And I guess that's the Muslim form of the returning Messiah. Most people don't realize that there are schools of thought that, you know, that's not Muhammad coming back. Muhammad ain't coming back. That's Jesus. So you got a bunch of weirdos in Iran, and you got a bunch of weirdos in Afghanistan, and you got a bunch of weirdos in Saudi Arabia, and you got a bunch of weirdos in the United States, and the one thing that they all believe is if they make things nasty enough and bloody enough and deadly enough and hellish enough, that somehow they're all going to make Jesus come back.
That doesn't make a whole bunch of sense to me, Bob.
No, it's mean and evil and crazy.
Yes, it is.
And the fact that it does not make sense to you indicates, and you should feel good about this, that you are neither mean, evil, nor crazy.
No, I'm not.
Because if you were if you were able to get on board with any of that, then that puts you in their camp.
No, I can't.
No, see?
I can't.
Right.
You know, I'm not a deeply religious man. Now, I believe in God, but, of course, a lot of people wouldn't believe that. And if they asked me what I thought God was and I told them, they'd really know I was nuts, I guess. I don't know. But
hey, you're not the crazy one, man.
No, I don't think so either, which
no, not
sometimes
when
I wonder if that makes me crazy. I don't know.
No, when you believe that a man whose first and foremost thought was love thy neighbor as thyself, first of all, love God, secondly, love thy neighbor as thyself, when you've gotten around to a philosophy that says that the guy who believed that more than anything else wants you to go and bomb someone, nah, you're believing, that's when you're talking about believing the crazy stuff.
Yes, exactly. And he didn't believe that.
Yeah. No.
Ain't no way.
You know, remember Sam Kinison?
Yeah, I do.
The great comedian?
The screamer.
Yeah. Said, you know, I can't wait to get to heaven because I want to be waiting. I want to be waiting there when Jerry Falwell gets there, and Jesus looks him in the eye and says, "Where did I say to build a water slide?"
There you go. But you know, I'd be very disappointed if Jerry Falwell ever got that far to be asked that question.
No, he just gets to the pearly. No, you're already smoking, dude. Later. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Wayne, thanks so much, man.
All right, brother.
See ya.
All right, man.
Bye now. Where did I say to build a water slide? Let's take a break. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
It's Grace.
We're actually very boring people, Rama. That's why we call ourselves homebodies.
Well, it's Rama.
Be sure. I mean, yeah, you know, group sex for us is when we're both involved.
That's a
It's really, really smart.
We're a nice little Petri dish here in Vermont because you can experiment.
Join Grace and Rama, homebodies, every Sunday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the web at homebodies.ramabahama.net.
the president came out and talked about the Iraq War and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard. We could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
She was a level-headed dancer on the road to alcohol, and I was just a soldier on the way to Montreal. Well, she pressed her chest against me about the time the jukebox broke. Yeah, she gave me a peck on the back of the neck, and these are the words she spoke. Blow up your TV, throw away your paper, go to the country, build you a home, plant a little garden, eat a lot of peaches, try and find Jesus.
Broadcasting live from a remote, undisclosed location in the wilds of wonderful West Virginia, Head On with Bob Kincaid.
Well, I sat there at the table.
God, I love John Prine. Welcome back. The tail end of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. No, okay, leave that one alone, Bob. No further. Jim had another thought for us. Hey, Jim, you're Head On.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, how you doing?
Just a thought to my earlier message about the nuclear situation we were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And is that too far away from the thread of the conversation?
No. You're fine.
Well, you know, when I hear people make fun of Bush like this guy for, you know, babbling, like, you know, what really frightens me so much is that man sleeps in a bedroom, and outside his bedroom is an Ewo. And that's the guy who carries that nuclear football.
Right.
Now, when or if tactical nuclear weapons should ever be deployed, we will have crossed the threshold beyond which there is no coming back. And I just want to ask you and your listeners one question. Have you any idea of the destructive power that one Los Angeles attack submarine carries?
I think I have a rough idea, yes.
And we're talking about 16 missiles with probably 10 warheads in each of those missiles, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's 160 targets. And what I'm trying to say is that the nuclear option is controlled by very highly trained people in their 20s. I mean, I'm talking about the guys who have their fingers on the trigger at the actual firing station.
Right.
But the possibility of it happening is very, very real, and it's not easily recalled. I mean, once those codes go out,
well, once George says do it,
it's done.
And you know, some kid in his 20s sitting at a console is not suddenly going to remember the 15-minute Nuremberg lecture that they gave him somewhere between chow and calisthenics.
No, he's going to be there with a companion, and it will take another person to insert that lock key and turn it gently. But nonetheless, I mean, knowing what I have seen this man do, and what you were just talking about with Wayne about how we're not going to go to war with Iraq, it just further accentuates in my mind and amplifies and solidifies in my mind the almost definite course upon which we are embarked, which is a form of total destruction of life as we know it.
Yes. Because you mentioned the other night the issues regarding other nations' self-protective
there is no element of
programs
protection against something like that.
No, but sort of like the same thing that was described in Dr. Strangelove, where if there is an attack and the entire command structure is taken out, certain computers are already programmed to do certain things with nuclear arsenals.
Well, we've talked about that before.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
The Russian Republic or in the areas they control in Siberia, they have over 7,000 hardened warheads and mobile launchers and things of that nature. So automatically programmed to go ahead and deliver.
Right.
And so, I mean, this man is just like someone who is walking around in a room filled with gunpowder with a lighted cigarette.
Yeah, he is. Or a guy in a rowboat striking matches on a sea of gasoline.
Well, whatever you want to say.
Sure.
I mean,
I know what you mean.
I mean, people can liken him to a cartoon character or something like that if they want to. But there is nothing funny about this man at all. There is nothing humorous about him, Bob.
Well, you know, it's funny when he mangles the language. He's a fun foil for our hatred of him. He earns it every day. It's hard not to laugh at a guy who comes across as ignorant as he is, but it is worth remembering, and I think you're right in reminding us of this, Jim. It is worth remembering that this man is deadly when he wants to be, he is deadly in earnest.
Well, and of course, and like it or not, he is the most powerful man in the world.
Exactly. Exactly. Jim, we got to roll on. Thanks. And quickly to Peter in Tallahassee. Hey, Peter, you're head on. Peter. There's Peter.
Hey.
How are you?
Hey, I'm doing good. I was just saying that even if you guys didn't say a word, I'd just listen for the music. Really, the reason I'm calling, there's an article today from the Washington Post, and I know you've seen it, and I hope that you've had some time to think about it, because honestly, I simply cannot wrap my head around it.
I know which article you're referring to.
It's hard to believe. Now, the beginning of this is just not unusual at all. It's Bill Frist. He's having the fifth annual Volpac fundraiser in Nashville later this month. And
right.
It's an invitation that Mrs. Bill Frist will be there, and he'll be there, and it's a fundraiser for other senators, and, of course, he'll be talking about being a 2008 president. And the big-time donors get to play golf and go to the Grand Ole Opry and go to the Frist Center for Visual Arts, you know.
Well, that sounds like a high old time. Let's all go.
Cocktail parties, the whole bit. It's just your standard Republican fundraiser. Nobody's surprised at that. But the thing that I have not been able to settle in my mind all afternoon is the invitation.
Oh, I know.
And if you already know, the thing about it is the invitation to this thing, when you open it up, it's a cowboy. It is a Brokeback Mountain looking kind of, you know, cowboy.
Blue jeans and the, yeah.
Yeah, and but the thing about it is in order to see, to read the invitation, you have to unbuckle the cowboy's pants and look inside to read the invitation.
No, Jesus, I know.
And this, you know, it brings back the Rolling Stones album cover with the zipper. Except,
yeah, sticky fingers.
Yeah, and you know, except this is a cowboy, and then to make it matters worse, when you turn the card over, you see the back of the cowboy, and the cowboy is wearing a red handkerchief in his right pocket, and for those who don't know,
that's some of that there gay code, isn't it,
well,
Peter?
Yes, it is. And you know, there's bars of every stripe are known. Some bars are known as pickup bars, and it's not so much popular anymore. But years ago, in the pickup bars, the guys would wear different color handkerchiefs in their back pocket, and depending upon which side it was on and what color was on, it meant what they were looking for sexually.
Right.
And
you handled that very well, by the way.
Well,
you described that very well. I would have screwed up terribly.
I'm so politically correct it hurts. The thing is, you know, I won't really go into what the red handkerchief in the right pocket means, except to say that it's a sexual practice that even most gay folk look down on, and it involves a fist.
Ah!
Take it from there.
Ah!
Okay. But, you know, I'm trying to fathom this. Is this some sort of a cruel joke?
Well, no, it's a play on words. Fist, frist.
Oh, my God. You don't think it's that simple? Oh, my God. That's a possibility, too. You know, and I'm thinking that, okay, they've hired out the designers for this card, you know, and the designers decided to pull a joke on them. But, you know, they had several different cards to choose from.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is Frist, so he probably, I mean, you know, he had to have the card run by, like, you know, Reverend Falwell or so. Well, my brother, Mr. Frist, let me get the pants off the cowboy here. Oh, my.
Yeah. it boggles the mind. You know, these people who are so morally righteous would send out an invitation where you got to take a cowboy's pants off to read it.
And the invitation itself, once you get the cowboy's pants off, don't miss a celebration of Southern hospitality, one-of-a-kind music, and special friends.
Well, don't get me wrong.
I'm thinking Jeff Gannon.
I'm all for taking cowboy's pants off.
We'll make another promo, Peter.
Oh, God, don't. Please don't. I'll go down in flames if I get another promo.
Don't say flames.
But, you know, how could that happen? Can you explain to me how this can happen? How could they do that?
This is what happens when you spend all that time in that log closet, Peter. I mean, it's like when termites hatch in the spring and you walk in and it's just like, and the entire apartment is just, you know, buzzing with them. I mean, these people are so latent it up.
What?
They're seeping their closeted gayness.
Well, it's got to be. They surely can't realize it on a conscious level, but at some subconscious level, they got to know they're taking a cowboy's pants off. I mean, you know, in the biblical sense. I just...
Imogen, we got our invite to Vol Pack 96. Well, where's it going to be? Well, wait till I get the cowboy's pants off.
Pants off. Oh, nope. Wrong color hanky, wrong pocket. I want another card.
Imogen.
Anyway, this...
No, but they really are, Peter. They're horribly, horribly repressed people. If they didn't do such evil things in the world, you would feel profoundly sorry for them. Because I don't care what anybody does when the lights are out or the lights are on, as long as everybody was consenting to the process. I don't care. It's none of my business.
The hypocrisy in this.
Right, but they make it their business. They live like it's their business. You know, my God, somebody probably sent one of these to the Reverend Fred Phelps.
Jesus.
And,
yeah.
But that, I mean, that's how, that, but their hypocrisy is catching up with them. It's, you know, I don't, what, you know, what happens in Bill Frist's office if they play somewhere over the rainbow?
Well, I hope to God that if this, the article stating the part of the meeting is to position himself as a 2008 candidate. I hope to God that one of these cards is prominently placed in a Democrat's a television commercial to just show people, you know, I mean, that's got to freak a lot of people out. I mean, it just freaked me out all afternoon. I can't even handle it. Hell, I've seen everything.
Yeah, it's a red flowered handkerchief too, Peter.
Well, I know. I know. The flowers are a special nuance that I shall not go into. And,
does that have something to do with the manicure on the phone? Never mind.
Oh, Lord. And before I forget about it, I sure would like to invite Jim to join us in the chat room. I've never seen him come in. We'd love to have him there.
Oh, that would be fun.
He's perfectly insane enough to be there. I mean, he could match wits with any of the craziest people there, and we got a plenty.
Got him to spare.
We'd love to see you there, Jim.
Hey, Peter, thanks so much.
Thank you. I enjoyed talking to you.
It was a pleasure, as always.
All right. So good night.
Bye now.
Love you, Peter.
Peter's not kidding, okay? This is the kind of stuff you can't make up. We found this, God bless you guys, we found this over at wd40.com. D-U-B-Y-A-D Volpack40.com. The fifth annual Volpack 06 weekend, Nashville, April 21st to 23rd. And no kidding, the writer here, Al Kamen, says, problem was, it was with some trepidation that we opened a most interesting card, which announced on a blue-jeaned cowboy's belt buckle the Volpack weekend. Problem was, you had to unbuckle the cowboy's pants and look inside to see what this was all about. Imagine our relief to find that we were cordially invited to the event honoring Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist and Mrs. Bill Frist, M.D. And, you know, then after a cozy cocktail reception, he said cocktail, there's Saturday night at the Grand Ole Opry and breakfast at the lovely Hermitage Hotel on Sunday morning. Don't miss a celebration of Southern hospitality, one-of-a-kind music, and special friends. You know, and like I said to Peter, that special friends, the blue jeans, the cowboy, the butch stuff, Jeff Gannon.
I think it's sweet.
And the back of the card shows the cowboy from behind with a red-flowered handkerchief sticking out of his right pocket.
They took this from Brokeback Mountain.
Oh, is someone having fun at Senator Frist's expense?
I hope so.
Or is it just a matter of Frist? Is only one letter more than, well, you get the idea. These are pitiful, pitiful people. They would, my heart would overpour with sympathy for them. But they're evil. These are the people who are going to stand up and cheer USA, 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 USA when there's a damn mushroom cloud rising over Tehran. You know, there are people, they're human beings, and yes, they're working in the nuclear program, you know, they're trying to build a nuclear reactor so they can have nuclear power in Iran, and there are people who work there. And, you know, remember, Iran is a terribly repressive regime, and these guys probably work there because they have to, or the mullahs will order their children killed, and so George wants to kill them. Oh, for God's sakes, now that the show's coming to an end, if you're not going to run over and listen to Malloy like I'm going to do, go to truthout.org, read the Cy Hirsch article, and read the stuff where they talk about how many targets are going to have to be hit. By how many planes with how many bombs. And how, well, you know, if you're going to do it, you might as well clean the slate. And, you know, don't just hit all the nuclear sites. Take out their army camps and take out this and take out that. And Jesus, and we thought killing 100,000 civilians in Iraq was bad. Wait till George starts bombing Iran. Will you let him do it? Will you let him do it? Or will you take to the streets? I'm not telling you to do anything. There's a website out there. Have a look at it. It's itmfa.com. Impeach the mother already. itmfa.com. Go get your button. Wear your button when you're marching in the streets. Impeach him. Demand that he be removed. If there is a Republican running in a congressional district in where you live, do everything in your power to get the Democrat elected. And then hold that Democrat's feet to the fire and tell them what must happen in order for them to remain Democrats in Congress. Okay? We're out of time. I thank everyone who participated. I missed you guys so bad Friday, I didn't know what to do. And we got through our Monday. We'll be back tomorrow night, of course, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. God only knows what, Australia. I hope you'll be with us. My lovely wife, Agnes, produced the show tonight, of course. You know that. Brian Reznor announced.